I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And we're a gay.
And his NB.
Episode number 93. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of A Gay and His NB, the podcast where we talk all things that we're watching on television this week. So excited to be talking with you again. Thank you all for joining us after this bit week hiatus. Like, if you follow us on social media, we mentioned it, but we were both incapacitated this last week in a way that was just not going to be capable of doing a podcast.
Literally forced horizontal. Like, we did not have an option to be vertical in front of microphones last week. It was bad.
We've somehow made it today.
Yeah, somehow. I still sound pretty gravelly, so apologies for my voice.
Yeah, so we're going to be doubling up on things and sort of getting you an extra double dose of A Gay and His NB this week in terms of all the things that we've missed and all the things that we still need to talk about in terms of television. But before we do any of that, we have a few housekeeping notes that we always have to get out of the way first.
Wherever it is that you're listening to us, whether that's Google Podcasts, that's still a thing, Google Podcasts.
Sure, right?
Sure, we'll say it. Google Podcasts.
It may have died when we were dying.
So. Yeah, we were also dying, so RIP. You know, whether it's the dead Google Podcast or Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever, if you could go and leave a rating and a review for us, not only does it help us get into the algorithm and find more lovely viewers like yourself. Viewers. Okay, we're reviewing today.
You view our podcast app.
Sure, that's what we're doing. it gets us more listeners like you, but it also lets us know what you're thinking about us. You know, we want to know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what you'd like to hear from us in the future.
You can also follow us across social media platforms, all at A Gay and His NB. That's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, where we're posting new content every day, including clips from the podcast and some of our instant thoughts about the things that we're watching, live tweeting. Just an extra dose of A Gay and His NB you can get across social media platforms, all at A Gay and His NB.
Also, if you'd like to support us and rep us out in the real world, you can head out over. Goodness, I cannot speak today.
Guys, we're trying.
We are on the struggle bus, and I'm so glad that you've joined us. But if you'd like to support us, head over to againisnb.threadless.com and pick up some of our merch. I've got a bunch of different designs on there that I have created. You know, and there's a bunch of different things you can get them on, cups and mugs and, t-shirts and blankets, you know, whatever your heart desires, you could probably find it on there. againisnb.threadless.com.
And last but not least, if you have any questions for us that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, you can be sure to submit that on the social media platforms that I mentioned before or at againisnb@gmail.com. Just be sure to leave your name, leave your question, and who knows, we may answer it on a future episode of the podcast. Babe, what are we talking about on this episode 93?
Well, like you mentioned earlier, we are doubling up. So we are going to be talking about both the finale episode and the reunion episode of The Traitors.
We probably won't have, spoiler alert, much to say about the reunion because I think
honestly,
it was a very odd sort of like...
There's really only like one or two things to mention.
We definitely will have a lot to say about the finale as it was very difficult not to sort of, you know, express that when everybody else was, you know, had tons of opinions about it.
Oh yeah. All the opinions. We're also going to be talking about, the second and third parts of the Married to Medicine reunion. Lots of stuff happening there.
Including the return of Apollo and some, you know, it was, again, a bit of a mixed bag, but still a really good set of episodes for a reunion.
Yeah. But before we get to any of that, let's talk Drag Race.
Drag Race, two episodes of Drag Race. I think this has definitely been a very interesting last 2 weeks for Drag Race. I mean, we left on a place where... I know you were very opinionated because I mean, does it feel like ages ago that Plasma went home? But no, it was only 2 weeks.
It was only 2 weeks.
I literally had to, like, when we were heading into here, go through my notes. I was like, wait, who went home like right before? I was like, oh wow, yeah, like it's wild.
We didn't have an elimination on the first episode,
yeah.
The episode from 2 weeks ago, and then last week's episode. We finally got an elimination.
We'll get into let's start with the first episode because this is where Drag Race makes me makes my head hurt a little bit. Not, you know, maybe that's a little intense, but it's like I was a little, spoiler alert, frustrated with how the big twists, like the twists this season don't really pan out. They're good ideas that don't really pan out into anything of substance, and that's kind of frustrating for me. As someone who is like a major like reality connoisseur, I hate when like something just doesn't...
It just flops.
Just really flops at the end of the day. We'll get to it with the immunity potions and sort of all that stuff.
Well, and the thing is that it was a clear choice, right? Like, they had opportunities, and then they actively chose the worst way to implement things.
When you're when we as fans are, like, theorizing, like, the really cool thing that could happen in terms of this, and then it just is...
Womp womp.
Yeah, very anticlimactic. And not just anticlimactic in terms of the decision, because whatever, but, like, the show's... It's like driving home the anticlimacticness by also being like, oh, by the way, no one's going home this episode. So why? So by the way, the potion doesn't matter. It's like, why would you do that? I don't know.
I didn't get it. Like, why are we like building this drama? Well, and the thing is that they are building the drama all season in the edit.
Yeah.
After they've already filmed it and know it's a flop.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, yeah, that's such a good point.
It's one thing for something to flop and it just flops, but it's something different when they actively are building up and they give all this tense music and all of that stuff to make it a thing, and then it's boring.
Yeah. It's.
It's very similar to how the chocolate panned out. Last season.
Well, or a season before. I would argue the chocolate was at least satisfying in the sense that I really loved Bosco and was happy that Bosco stayed. You know what I mean? At least when Bosco had the golden ticket.
Like, but it felt producer-y.
Sure. No, but that I can understand. Like,
that to me is a flop.
Sure.
Exactly. When I can see when it's not truly random, that to me takes me out of it. I don't want to see the producer's hands.
Right.
Like, we all know that they're there, but I want to forget during the 90 minutes of the show. You know what I mean?
Sure. But I just think, like, yeah, we'll get to it. So the challenge for the first episode 2 weeks ago was the power. I think it was
called Work the World was the episode.
Well, maybe, because they do say that the song is going to be used on Work the World, which I hope not the one with the girl's lyrics. No offense, but like, there's some good stuff in here, but like, I would hate to be like one of the regular girls that like has to do Work the World all the time and then do like these like lyrics that... Here's the thing. I think I said it maybe during the girl group challenge, but it's like they need to talk them off the ledge at a certain point from putting so many lyrics in these verses to where it's like they want it. It's like you're trying to hit a word count, and it's like, my God, there's no... You lose all rhythm and you lose all like, well, any enjoyment I can get from these lyrics when you just are like trying to hit like... I don't know.
Well, it becomes mumble rap, right?
Yes.
Like, it's one thing if you're going to rap a verse. Absolutely fabulous. Love that. Do it. But like, if you are not someone who can rap at that speed, put three words in there and be done. Like, don't try to... Who was it that did that? There was a couple. Was it Nymphia's that was like really slow?
Yeah, it was like three words.
But it was like, girl, it worked.
Yeah.
I wasn't mad at it.
I could hear every lyric. I could like decipher. Like, it, like, even... And it also doesn't even allow you to do anything fun with the verse, right? Like,
right.
Even, spoiler, I thought... Well, because we'll get to the challenge. We can talk about it broadly now. Like, I thought Morphine did the best, which I was very happy. I mean, Sephira did great as well, but I think if there was going to be a single winner, I thought it should have been Morphine, simply from the challenge. And I like that also because Morphine also didn't fit 10 million words into it to where she could play with, like, the syncopation a little bit and could do... And those, like, Tim... When you're songwriting, a hook that like is like gets in your brain in that way is necessary to, like, again, when you like when you jam in a bunch of lyrics, you lose any ability for me to latch on to anything and have it be met. I can't remember any of like Plain Jane's
at
lyric,
all.
Like in terms of it. There were a couple where I was just like, I can't, like.
And I'm going to sound like a broken record.
And not just
because
my brain is like full of sickness. But.
And I'm going to sound like a broken record. I thought Plain Jane was pretty fucking Plain Jane this week.
Wasn't she? I mean,
it was boring.
Wasn't she wearing like the same?
It looked like her blue
doll look.
Yeah, her doll look.
Like what was like? I don't know. I definitely thought Plain. This undoubtedly was a moment of like we can't have Plain go home, and I think that's why they did what they did.
That sort of shit pisses me
off. Which makes me think that now that I think about it, I was like, oh, they thought that she was going to use her potion on herself, probably.
Yeah.
Which, duh, do that. I don't know. Like, it just seemed odd to me. The whole theme of the song, I guess, or the whole theme of the challenge mainly is also like motivating people to vote. Like it's like use your power to, you know, your advantage and all that stuff. And you know, which, you know, timely and all that. But I thought it was generally pretty good. And I like the people also like that took that and sort of like ran with it in terms of message and weaved it in. Like Safira did a good job of that as well. Like,
yeah,
she talked about using like the, Lift Every Voice and Sing as like an inspiration piece to sort of like,
right,
you know, go into like the lyrics and stuff like that. Dawn, did you feel like Dawn was also like trying very heavily to sort like, I am not trying to say that she is making up any of her mental health struggles because we're queer people. We all have mental health struggles. Like and that's not downplaying it, but like, you know, it's incredibly common, but like just the way she was talking a lot about like my inner child. And like nowadays I'm like, okay, are you playing a RuPaul? Like, are you trying to get like the easy, like,
but honestly, know your audience.
Sure.
If you know RuPaul is up there and her favorite buzzword is inner saboteur, fucking play off that shit.
Right.
Like the name of the game is not RuPaul's Drag Race. The name of the game is Make RuPaul Laugh Race. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, so I, yeah.
Can I also note that I've really got annoyed with the critiquing of, we'll get to the end. I've developed myself into a Maya Iman LePage stan at this point, and I know it's like slightly ironic, but like I know it's not for like no, I don't think she should win the season. Don't get me wrong, but like I thought she like I didn't like them like shitting on her for like rhyming equal with equal and but it's like
no, I thought that was dumb.
Really? Because yeah. Okay, but like. When they did the recording expression and they explained like, oh, like, just make sure you put more emphasis on the second, like do some sort of like emphasis thing with the second.
Right.
Equal
and she didn't.
She kind of did.
Okay. But it wasn't enough to where I was like, oh, you're doing like this cheeky thing where you like, cause Leland was like, okay, so this is not a thing that we do, but since we don't have time to rewrite your verse right now,
okay,
let's fix it. Let's make it to where it's a joke. Like you're going, oh, well, I was going to say something else, but now I'm just going to say the same word again. You know, but I didn't get that when she was singing it.
Sure.
Like she didn't make a pun out of it. There was no like waka waka elbow in the ribs sort of thing.
No, there definitely is. There's never that with Maya, unfortunately. Like, I don't think there's, like, a humor there that's intentional at all. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah, I hate when people are like, well, you can't rhyme the same word together in a song. It's like, it's a song. You can literally, like, there is a lot of, like, you can, again, you can do a lot of different things. And so that's where, like, it becomes frustrating in that regard.
Sure. That was one of only several sins she committed. The other was being boring.
Sure.
Like she was wearing neon hair and I didn't look at her.
Yeah, but it wasn't really even neon. It was like slightly muted kind of. Like it was like the sort of like not ombre, but like
I don't know. I'm looking at a picture. It's pretty neon green.
Oh, I guess it was a little bit. Yeah. It was maybe duller of a color. Is more what I'm thinking.
Still. But like I don't know. I just, the people that I think most people would have said, oh, yeah, they're going to do great in this, did not do great.
No.
And the people that I was expecting to struggle with this are the ones that shined.
Q played to their strengths, which I appreciated, and like that end look, sort of that weird like 80s like mm-hmm. sort of like
it was like it was
kind of gender fuck, like
yeah, it was almost like a David Bowie kind of vibe to it.
Yeah,
which I really enjoyed. I also just really loved the fact that Morphine's just.
Oh, Morphine looked stunning. This
nude bodysuit with this fucking giant fuck you hair was so good.
There was just something about, she felt so much like an actual performer to where like any group thing, my eye gravitated towards her. And yeah, so that
it was very, very, very well done.
That lended to that. I would say they definitely stood out the most. You really liked Nymphia's. I remember.
I did like Nymphia's because it gave a different pace, and it's one of those things where you when someone changes the rhythm in a line of lyrics like that, you're like, oh, this is new.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a drop into halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like it was really kind of like this chill, laid back vibe.
I feel like they were trying to tell us in the edit that Nymphia was going to do poorly and therefore needed to be saved. But like, I didn't really, like you said, I didn't really get that sense.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And like, I like the line of like, "Don't ban my beauty" was like a fun sort of something that like I remembered at the very least and like kept on to, even though I'm a little sick of the yellow stuff.
Yeah.
Banana stuff, it's a little overdone at this point, but
brand when they tell you to and on episode one, otherwise show us new shit.
Yeah,
like that's to me.
Did you see the Nymphia stands on Twitter being like showing all of her looks, and they're like, I guess only like four of them have been like banana yellow looks, and they're like, oh, and they say she only wears bananas and yellow. I'm like, okay, but she does it a lot.
But like four out of 10 episodes.
And that doesn't include other challenges where she references the banana thing. Like, come on. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's not hitting for me in the way that I would hope for it to. So the guest judge was Jamal Sims, because he was also the choreographer for this. Love Jamal.
I love Jamal Sims.
He really does a great job of, I will say, giving everybody stuff that works for them and sort of like making the best product possible and delivering in terms of that.
Right, very much so.
The runway category for that episode is True Colors, so it was basically take your favorite color and sort of like build a look sort of around it. How the fuck, like, what is Safira packing? How many carts is Safira being given at this point?
Because there's four or five
looks now that are like gigantic.
As far as I know, you can bring five of those crates.
And she
that is what I know to be the rules of Drag Race.
Did she pack everything else in like her carry-on for like her boy clothes? Like,
I mean, I guess. Or I mean, I'm thinking that she has like a TARDIS.
Or something.
Like all of her crates are bigger on the inside somehow.
She has that royal blue, almost like queen style, mm-hmm. which also like the Marge Simpson hair and all.
Yeah,
stunning,
just like
freaking stunning.
I guarantee you that it's all built to like fold.
It has to be.
It has to be built to fold. Fold flat. Everything folds flat.
Or it's like massive like the structure, construction.
The structure has like hinges in it somewhere.
Yeah.
Got to, because that's the only way she fucking fit all of that shit, and all those petals from the flower look, and all those fuck, like, dear God, this woman.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And I also thought Morphine looked like the best that Morphine's ever looked, with that purple, with the sort of like, kind of like 60s hat with like the, I really love the capelet.
Yes.
The way it was like just the right amount of see-through and created this like cool like silhouette and line.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan of Q's look.
Which one was? Oh,
it was the lavender with the weird bustier was, or the bralette thing. Yeah, the hat didn't fit right.
The hat was the statement piece, obviously, and the hat is a great like giant statement. But like, yeah, there was something about the cut of the bra that I did not love.
Yeah,
and you know, it was a little.
I really loved Dawn's.
Oh, the little like...
It looked like a creepy like little doll that you would sleep with.
I like how she sold it a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I love the little... There was something about like the prancing and like the... That she really built a character around it and sort of like, you know.
Very much. Let's see.
Nymphia wore yellow again. I mean, here's the, but also that's that also frustrates me with her when it comes to like, you know, you knew you had a look that was like specifically color based and like you at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm scrapping the other banana looks, right?
Right. It's like, girl.
I don't get it. Like, I don't get, I think she's a very creative person and has a good thought process a lot of the time. To where this choice doesn't make sense to me.
But I'm also confused because it's like, why did they have two people that were assigned blue?
Well, were they assigned blue or was it just like you get your favorite color? You pick whatever your favorite color is, right?
There's no way that it was. I mean, maybe. Because
they weren't given everything from the rainbow, right?
The only color that was missing was... Was orange.
Yeah, but how are the... Yeah, and but when you're prepping, like, how are you going to predict, like, what the... Like, you know what I mean? It, like, I just don't think there was, like, a prepared... Like, assigned thing ahead of time. Like, you had to... It was just sort of, like, pick a favorite color. Like, do what you will with it. Like,
I mean, maybe, but then how did they end up with... Like, my thing is that this is, like, a political anthem, power, show your colors, pride thing, and they end up with the entire pride flag with one color.
Part. Yeah.
There was planning.
I guess, maybe. Unless, maybe there was planning when they got there, right? And they sort of like, okay, well, what do you... Because, I mean, like, you can do a lot with color, right? Like, so
yeah,
like,
I guess that's true.
And it wasn't all, like, monochrome, right? So right. It's like, you had the choice to kind of just, you know, do what you will. Anyway, so... this is the last week where Plane can use her immunity potion. She decides to use it on Nymphia. Everyone's shocked by that.
Which is because they had been teasing it all episode.
Yeah.
That she was going to put it on Nymphia, but it was originally presented as like a trick. To play a trick on Nymphia so that she did poorly.
Sort of,
thinking
yeah.
Thinking she would be saved. And then you use it on yourself or something. And then she actually used it on Nymphia. And who was it that it was somebody else's idea. It wasn't Plane's idea.
Oh, I think maybe Dawn's.
Probably Dawn's. Because Dawn's vying for villain role number two of the season.
Yeah.
So, but it was just weird the way that that all played out.
Yeah, and it's like, so like, spoiler, they do a top two instead of a bottom two. They narrow it down to where it's Saphira and Morphine and then Plane, who clearly got negative critiques. And so therefore it's like, what the fuck? But it's like I said before, like, what's the point of doing the potion there and sort of like having that be the moment where nobody ends up going home. So it's like, there was no value in like saving anybody.
Yeah. It was just a womp womp.
Yeah. But Saphira and Morphine end up being the top two. I was sad because I wanted Morphine to get a win, and this definitely felt like, okay, we'll give you praise and like that, but not necessarily give you the win. They have to lip sync for the win, and they, oh my God, they make them lip sync to Made You Look by Meghan Trainor, which it was like, this, I don't mind Meghan Trainor, but like this choice of song, it's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it was a little wonky to me.
Like, you could, I feel like Morphine under her, like, in the back of her mind was definitely being like, well, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
You know, there's not much you can do with it. They did a decent enough, like,
yeah,
you know,
it was a good lip sync. It was just an odd song choice, kind of limiting song choice.
Yeah. Saphira ends up winning. It was, yeah, like I said, good enough, in terms of that. And at that, I mean, spoiler alert, it ends the next episode, but both of Saphira's wins being from lip sync wins is also pretty impressive, at least at this point in the competition.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So let's move into the next episode after that. I thought it was, I will say, as much as it was like nothing satisfying from the potion hole scenario, I did love them sort of like getting on Plane when they got back into the workroom about like, she definitely would have been in the bottom had they done a bottom two. And she was like, no, I don't remember being called bottom two.
Girl. They called you safe, they said you were topped by Nymphia.
Yeah.
They clearly told you, the judges clearly told you, you fucked up.
So it was there. And then like Dawn reading her for her dress, the like sort of like broken glass style, like,
oh, yeah,
like design and how boring it was. And then Plane just getting up and reading Dawn about like you're wearing cloth from a children's bedroom and you're like a fucking mess. And like, you know, this is all concept and no glamour and fucking.
I'm sorry. I was more entertained by Dawn's look than I was. Like, yes. Was Plain Jane's look prettier? Absolutely. But that's not always the job,
sure,
of a runway look. I was more interested in Dawn's because Plain Jane's looked like, you know, something you would see at any gala.
Yeah.
Like any rich bitch would wear that dress.
It was pretty, but you know.
It was pretty, but nothing special.
Sure. But it was just nice to see that like Plane get activated in that way and sort of have, yeah, that sort of like it, like that moment was really good.
Yeah.
The workroom the next day, the maxi challenge for the week. They do a mini challenge called Spill the Tea where they have to do like basically like Rue would ask questions about like how,
right,
you know, who's the shadiest, who's the dumbest, who's whatever, and then like if you get the majority vote or whatever, then therefore you know, you get a point and all that stuff. It was fun enough, like light little game. Saphira ends up winning, get some money. I like that they added money to it, like actual money. Fun little challenge. And
it was nice because everybody got $100 for, or not 100, like $1,000 for every point that they had.
I think it was like 100 actually.
Or no, yeah. So Saphira got, let me look at my notes.
She got like 3,000.
She got 3,400. So it was 2,500 for winning. And then everybody that got points got $100 per point that they got.
Right. And they got to keep their money too.
They got to keep their money as well.
That was nice.
So that was nice.
The maxi challenge for this week is essentially to give a, write and deliver a drag awareness employee seminar where, so you're doing like a TED talk or like,
yeah,
some kind of like, you know, like office presentation sort,
right,
of thing. Interesting enough challenge that I thought, well, so they just pair the team. Like, so Rue's like, okay, so you guys are in a team. You guys are like seemingly out of complete random. I thought that they were definitely like, we got to do anything possible to get Maya gone by this point. As much as I would agree that it is her time to go home in the sense that you can't, like, you know what I,
yeah,
mean? Like, there's no other win that she's necessarily going to get unless it's, like, another major lip sync sort of, like,
sure,
challenge. Like, you know, you have to sort of figure out a way to get her home. So I feel like pairing her with Dawn, like, was very much giving her no opportunity
chance
to, like, because yeah, it's like.
But also, like, if you're wanting to make sure that she goes home, wouldn't you want to put her with someone that is going to give her, that you know is going to give her a run for her money in the lip sync?
So, I mean, well, yes. At the end, I mean,
Dawn is an unproven talent for her to go against in the bottom two.
Right, but I think they thought Dawn was going to be fine. Like, I think they thought Dawn would absolutely exceed Maya and then just, like, make Maya's look, at, you know, as poor as possible in comparison.
Maybe.
You know what I'm saying? And Dawn is not the person to like, write out a joke in a way like if she was paired with Saphira, for example, right Saphira and her, both in the sense that Saphira has shown the willingness to help Maya,
right,
you know, they have a similar possible style in comedy,
yeah,
and a way to go, where Dawn's comedy is so cerebral that it's like you can't really write for Maya.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of almost have to set that up as a pinky of the brain kind of situation.
Yeah, or something.
And they
like
didn't
that.
Do that. So the teams are, do you know your drag herstory? And that's Plain Jane and Q.
Uh-huh.
And then we have drag in the workplace, which is Dawn and Maya. And then we have, are you a drag queen? You might be surprised, which is Morphine, Nymphia, and Saphira. These are weird categories.
No, yeah. And
this was like, throw this challenge at a chat GPT and see what comes out. Yeah. Like, it was real weird.
It really was just, I mean, it was, I don't remember anything from the actual, like, prompts, to be honest. Like, I just, because to me, it was just an opportunity to do, like, a stand-up-esque set and, like, yeah. get your jokes in or whatever. Can we talk about, so, the plane and queue did well. I think I showed you the
How they ripped off Katya?
Basically, like, kind of like Katya in her one woman show has literally the same joke where it's like, let's show you some clips, and it's pictures of paper clips, and
yeah,
which is a funny, I mean, is not the most like, I'm sure other people other than Katya have made that joke, so therefore it's like,
but
not,
when Plain Jane has already come in and the first thing out of her mouth is fuck you Katya.
Right.
In the season.
And is already getting shit for, like, doing Jimbo stuff. And like,
right.
Yeah.
It's like, how much more derivative are you going to be?
Right.
Like, that is, I think, my biggest gripe about Plain Jane is that there is not a damn thing original about her. And it's very irritating.
Right. Yeah. But overall, it was a serviceable job. And they were definitely funny. I wouldn't say they were hilarious, so to speak. But that's only because the humor that, like, worked on Drag Race and worked in that presentation wasn't my personal brand of humor. I thought, spoiler alert, I thought Safira winning was rightfully deserved because I found Safira funnier.
Right.
But, and even like with the trip up that Safira had at one point during it.
Right.
She rebounded enough to where it was, I didn't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the, like, so, cause spoiler alert, Safira wins. And Q is incredibly pressed about this.
It, like, which is weird because literally in Untucked, she was saying that she thought Safira would win.
Or that there was a chance of it, right? And it's like, what do you, you know, I think it's maybe just saying that to be nice to Safira, I guess, in her mind. But, like,
I honestly, I don't even think Q was in the top two. She was maybe in the top three.
Right.
But I think that they really kind of wanted to give it to Nymphia, but they felt very uncomfortable rewarding the...
Oh, my God. Can I say I hated them, like, hand-wringing this?
Well,
I get why... Part of me is, like, I get partly why you're hand-wringing it, but it's, like, here's a... Guess what? People of certain nationalities are allowed to do comedy characters that are about their... that are about stereotypes of their nationalities.
Well, what gets me is that Maya was literally rewarded for Snatch Game,
yeah.
which is the same thing.
Right.
It was exactly the same thing. Maya was playing off stereotypes of the quote-unquote ghetto black girl.
Right.
Like, so, yeah, and it was funny. It was hilarious. I'm not knocking Maya for that performance. It was great. But so was Nymphia's.
Right.
And if they, like, I get that Rue is black, so she gets to, like, laugh at that and reward that, and she doesn't feel uncomfortable for reward. But we had Joel Kim Booster sitting there going, yeah, that was fucking funny.
Right. But even Joel had moments of just kind of like, okay, so I think because she is Asian, therefore she is allowed to, like, it's like, yes, we know this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they made, like, some comment in the judging about, like, yeah, well, Michelle, you can't make those jokes. And it's like, right. No, correct.
Yeah.
Like,
she gets to make jokes about being from Jersey.
Right.
Like, and being a whore. Like, those are the jokes she gets to make. And she makes them all the time.
I just don't get why it's that hard of a concept. Like, in terms of understanding, like, what is, like, yes, in context, certain people can make certain jokes that other people can't because in context that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I just,
it was weird and the judges made it uncomfortable.
Right.
Because nobody was uncomfortable at the joke.
No,
it was uncomfortable when they judged it.
Yeah. It was frustrating. Yeah. So Q and going back to the Q thing though, do we think that the, because I forgot, like, until I started, like, watching back, like, some, like, older, like, from this past season, like, even earlier in the season, Q does have, like, this, like, semi-sore loser reputation now that she's, like, building.
Well, and not just sore loser, sore winner.
well, sore winner, but also like when Plasma won the first time when she didn't, like she was all in her feelings. Like she questioned Nymphia's like win in the first design challenge over her. Like she's starting to sort of develop this like it as one of her character traits, which I find fascinating and also I think makes sense for Q because Q gives that vibe off to me.
A little bit, yeah.
Like she's very not try hard, but like she's invested in everything that she does.
Yeah.
And so therefore
eager, earnest.
Sure. Like that's probably the nice way to put it. And this whole week she had her moment where she talked about being HIV positive and
right.
doing a look because the runway they do is like DragCon 1980. So she did this whole Keith Haring inspired look that with the
which was ribbon, gorgeous.
Which yeah looked absolutely fantastic. And also
very designing women.
When Q is doing her tragedy mirror talking about having HIV in the workroom to Plain Jane, and what was it that Plain said about like
she said. Oh God!
Thank
it was,
you for spilling, Mama. Like it was something like so like
it was very much like your straight mom looking up queer like terminology on the internet and then trying to use the slang. It was bad.
But also the like I don't know how to be like a conciliatory person to where I can like you know have you cry on my shoulder because you have this like you know disease. So I'm just like
yeah.
Thanks for sharing. Like, so he was like, what? Okay. Like,
I almost expected her to like pull out a stick with a hand on the end to pat her on the back with it.
Yeah.
It was that awkward.
It was very weird. But anyways, I think that was like, that played into Q's emotions in terms of all that. We talked already about the runway category, flashback, DragCon 1980. Were there any other looks that kind of stood out for you? In terms of, I thought this was kind of a weaker week only because I don't know if there's a lot you can do with the 80s. I did like Nymphia's, the Grace Jones, vamp, callback, the purple with the, again, another like Keith Haring style look and all that. Very, very good. And a good departure for Nymphia.
I was very irritated. I was very irritated with their critique of Dawn's look because fuck you, that looks exactly like the goddamn 80s.
Raja and Raven on Fashion Photo Review, I don't think I watched it with you, but like also were like, I don't know if this is 80s. And I'm like, okay, like
it's literally, now, is it 1980? No, but most of those looks weren't 1980.
Right.
Because 1980 was still disco era.
Right. And there's blending like between certain decades, right?
But like it was definitely, if you said 1980s, like if you opened it to the entire 1980s, then Dawn's absolutely was like a club kid look from the late 80s.
Sure.
Like you can't fucking convince me it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like Neon was king in the queen rather, you know, in the late 80s. So yeah, it's exactly correct. I was particularly irritated by that critique.
I felt bad for Morphine because her wig apparently had some like major malfunction issue for the look that she brought and had to borrow Q's hair, which did not look good on her at all. And like,
we have to talk about Maya's look.
Oh my God. I laughed so hard. So I literally thought she, okay. So there was also this trend of this episode of one of my favorite traits about Maya, I realized, which is that she's just a liar. Like I feel very meat coded to a certain extent. Like when Shell was doing the walkthroughs with Joel Kim Booster and she was telling Maya like, so Maya, have you like hosted before? And she's like, yeah. And Morphine, it turns to Saphira, I think, and it's just like, she's literally never hosted in Miami. What is she talking about? Like,
she's like, I speak on the mic.
I do jokes and, you know, get people excited. I was like, you're bullshitting. And I understand why you're bullshitting. Because, like it's just the one thing of, like, when you're in, like, a job or something. And being like, yeah, I know how to do this and whatever. But, I thought she did it again with this look. So she's in this, like, green bodysuit, sort of like kind of like, you know, like Dreamgirls-esque style look. And she says in her voiceover that she Googled flashback DragCon 1980s, and this was the look that came up. So she made it. And I was like, wait, what? Like, what is, how, that doesn't make any sense. Like, how, but then apparently she's not lying because someone had done an AI, like,
right.
What would Drag Race look like in the 80s?
The original post is from Valentine's Day of 2023.
Yeah.
By Plastic on Instagram. But yeah, there's a whole list of looks. It's not just this one.
Yeah.
And
she's like, oh, I'll do that one. Cool.
But it was, girl.
You were kind of upset of the, like, if we did this, like that it's a little, not copyright, but like, what's the word when you like steal someone's stuff or like you kind of felt it was like stealing in terms.
Yeah.
Of
that. It's like, you didn't design this. Look, you stole this from someone else, which is what you've been doing all fucking season.
Okay. But she's also, I also have felt bad for Maya because she was at Roscoe's and basically said that there were like five designs that she had for like this runway where a designer just days before going to Drag Race just completely bailed on her on. So she was like freaking out and like trying to like figure out how to get shit together and like,
okay, that I completely have empathy for that. That doesn't excuse the three design challenges that she's used someone else's design.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's okay. The design, I feel like they're different things in terms of that. And
but to me, it's a pattern.
Sure.
Like, usually when a queen is working with a designer for preparation for Drag Race, it is a queen's ideas that the designer then fleshes out and creates a look.
Here's
from.
The thing. I don't think she has. I think the problem is I don't think she has ideas.
I genuinely don't. Like, sometimes I feel like there's cobwebs between her ears.
And here's the thing. I don't think that's a bad, that makes her like a bad person. I don't even know if she's necessarily even a shy person. Like they were, I don't know if you saw the Whatcha Packin' with Michelle, where Michelle was like, still, even after this, trying to be like, was it your nerves like that, you know, hurt you? And she was like, yeah, it's my nerves. Yeah. Just gotta be more confident. And it's like, I don't think it really, I just think this is who Maya is as a person.
Yeah.
And I think she loves drag in the sense that she loves to get into a sparkly outfit and do flips. And that's fine.
Which is fabulous. But it's not,
it's
like,
not, you're not going to win drag race. You're not going to win Drag Race.
Doing
way.
Drag and doing well on Drag Race are two different
skill
sets.
Two very different things.
Like, just because you are a fabulous, amazing, cunty drag queen on your home scene, or even on an international stage, right? Doesn't matter how big you are.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you will adapt well to Drag Race.
And like
Trixie's talked about this a lot.
Right.
Like how it's a completely different set of skills required to win Drag Race.
And honestly, if she increased her booking fee by getting on this show, good for her.
Good for her.
Like, yeah. I think she's happy with that.
Yeah.
Like, I would guess. And I don't think she needs, like, I don't think she got into drag for those reasons, right? I don't think she got into drag to be, like, this, like, amazingly creative-minded person. I think she likes to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, why she loves drag.
And bitch can turn the house down.
Yeah, and like, will be a great lip sync assassin. I don't think she needs to come back for like an All Stars in terms of actually competing.
No,
I mean we're seeing with Gothy Kendall on UK versus the World, where it's like, yeah, you're
there's a reason you went home episode one, well, two of UK.
No, one. It was the first episode. She really only made it through the first episode of her original season.
Oh,
but like, was like, yes, it was nice to see her do other things this season, but it was like,
but it was exactly what you would think it was going to be seeing her on that one episode of UK.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
She did great in the design challenge and she looks very beautiful. And so like, good on her.
Yeah. Can we talk about how the wig looked like basically the same shape as, what's the challenge from like season 9 that Aja did with the
Princess Disaster hair? Yeah.
It was floppy.
It was strange.
Flat front to back and it flopped when she was moving. And I was like, this looks like Princess Disaster hair.
Yeah.
This is bad. She's going to go back there and accuse someone of walking on the runway in a diaper.
Yeah, it was, I mean, the lip sync, how it ended, it was like literally the two queens who had like deflated hair at that point, because even Morphine wasn't that,
yeah,
wasn't that good in that regard. Like I mentioned, Safira ends up winning. Q is pressed as fuck about it, but yeah, he's going to have to get over it.
Honestly.
I fully agreed with it. And then Maya and Morphine end up being the bottom two. I don't know who was going to be in the bottom other than Morphine of the people. Like, it was clearly Maya. Yeah. And then like,
I think they just wanted her Miami sister to send her home.
Sure. But they lip sync to Dim All the Lights by Donna Summers. This lip sync was great.
So good.
So fucking good. And we differ in personal opinions in terms of the, well, maybe not in terms of the attitude towards Maya. So they do the big build up. So it's like a big, like vocal build up in the Donna Summer song, and Morphine's doing this like back bend, like belting moment as Maya is like twirling in her, and she takes her cape off that she has in like attached to this look and takes it and throws the fucking cape on Morphine, and they play the fucking Mimi I'm First music over it, which I think added to the nasty spin on it, in my view.
Yes.
But Morphine like does the, like, immediately takes it, spins it, throws the cape out. Here's the thing. You can my thing is that Maya is clearly learned in and very inspired by ballroom culture.
Well,
like, that comes across in her drag a lot.
Well, I have actually since found out that both Maya and Morphine are involved in ballroom,
right,
in Miami.
And the way Morphine took that moment,
right,
showed that as well for me.
Like, I think if she had done that to another queen,
oh,
it could have been dangerous.
Oh, if she did that to Dawn, it would have been terrible.
It could have been dangerous.
Yeah.
That was my concern. Like, if you're doing a back bend like that and suddenly you go blind, it could throw you off balance. It can, like if you put your arm down to catch yourself, you can break a wrist.
Sure.
Like, so that's what I was initially worried about and why it upset me watching it initially. Knowing that they are both from ballroom, that eases my concerns a lot.
Right.
Because we know from watching Legendary that shit is intense.
It was giving the get over me here moment where she snatches the cape up. Like, that's like, I haven't seen that on Drag Race in a while, in a way where it was shown. Like, they did kind of play it as if it was like super like low blow on Maya's part in the edit. Like, and but I was like, I do think there was like, Maya's like, if it's a battle, I'm gonna battle. And so that's like the mindset, right?
My issue was that this was now the third time that she's broken lip sync rules.
Sure.
Right? First, that she came out of her shoes, then she came out of her wig with no wig underneath it.
Yeah.
And then now she's made drag a contact sport. So like, these are three cardinal no-nos, and she's gotten away with it twice.
Right. I said it first off, though.
I thought it was appropriate. Here's the thing. Break the rules when it makes sense. Take the wig off when you've got a wig underneath it. You know, take the shoes off when you're doing a, like, reference to something. Like,
yeah,
she did, like, the kick your shoes off and do the church dance type thing. So that, I thought, was perfectly acceptable.
Right.
But she didn't have the wig. And then she made it a contact sport. Now, I thought this was fine, again, knowing that Morphine is also involved in ballroom and is used to more intense type of a lip sync.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get that. So knowing that, cool. Go for it. I am concerned that if there had been another queen involved in that lip sync, that Maya may have still done that and it may have caused a physical injury.
Can you imagine if she did it to Plane? And like, just from a, and like, I feel like Plane would just entirely, well, I think Plane would take that the wrong way. I think Q would take it the complete wrong way. Not just in terms of like what you're saying, but also like in terms of just like, how dare she, like, fucking, like,
yeah,
you know, it was placed in the right moment, I think, right. in a way that made sense in that regard. And it was just a fierce lip sync overall.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, and Morphine won.
She
definitely won in my view. And like, you know, even though Maya still held her own, it's like one of the things where it's like, you're never going to like have someone bomb that lip sync when you're the lip sync assassin of the season. And Maya clearly is, in my view.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maya ends up coming home very sad to see. I enjoyed Maya in many ways.
I definitely enjoyed her lip syncs.
Yeah. And I think she has like underrated good shade. Again, classic Miami ballroom shade. She,
sure.
You know, but it doesn't always translate on Drag Race.
Right.
And that's the difference. So that's how Drag Race the last 2 weeks have turned out. I would say pretty interesting mixed bag of a series of.
Yeah. And we've definitely got a. What is this weird challenge coming up next week with the bathroom design challenge?
Oh my God. The writer's strike, I think, fucked them.
No, honestly. Like, what is this HGTV bullshit?
No.
It's not. This is fucking Drag Race. Drag queens are not interior designers.
And we're top six and we're designing toilets. All right. Like, that's a choice. Anyways, but we'll review it next week and it should be interesting. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're talking the finale of The Traitors. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
And, you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Mayhem.
That's right.
Do you want something new to put on your reading list? Are you feeling your holiday spirit grow while also being astutely politically in tune?
Then you'll want to pick up The Santa Strike, a new book by Shanna Hamaker.
While home in Midland, Texas, on a weekend visit with the eccentric uncle who raised him, Marion Wachowski, otherwise known as Mary, discovers a long-forgotten letter Uncle Joe wrote to Santa Claus. Mary keeps it to share with his girlfriend Lindsay and his best friend Tommy. At first, they consider the letter to be nothing more than a silly lark. What kind of grown man would write a letter to Santa? But soon, Mary and Lindsay find themselves caught in a much larger mystery, concerning many, many more letters to Santa, all surrounding the crisis of gun violence in America.
You can order The Santa Strike now on Amazon, available both on Kindle and in paperback.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and a Zimby. Let's take one last trip to the Scottish Highlands, where faithfuls and traitors alike face the fire of truth, and the entire cast reunites to discuss a season of deception and betrayal on The Traitors.
The Traitors, season two. We are at the finale. I guess we can start like from the offset of the winners, and therefore our thoughts kind of generally, because that was kind of the place a lot of people were in about. The winners ended up having a lot to do with people's feelings about this finale in certain ways. Like,
sure.
Have you seen that? Queens of Bravo. I forgot who it was, but it was like The Traitors this season. And you know, that meme of like
the horse drawings,
and then it just like ends like,
yeah, it was the really bad horse drawing at the end. Yeah. That's kind of how I felt about it.
Yeah. We'll kind of dive into our thoughts overall on the season. But so on the offset, our winners are CT and Trishelle, which I was happy CT won. I'll say that.
I was definitely happy CT. You know what? If Trishelle is going to take the feedback from fans,
yeah,
which she says she is, then fine.
Here's the thing.
I will be happy that she won if this is a turning point for her.
Well, and also I will say this. I think some people need to be honest about the fact that you cannot like that Trishelle won and also think that she deserved to win in terms of pure gameplay. Like, I think she was very on top of things in this game and was right more often than she wasn't.
Sure.
I mean, we hated that because we love Phaedra and we love, like, the. I think it was in a position where we really wanted the traitors to win.
Right.
And that's kind of also a weird place to be in sometimes where it's like.
Well,
people are doing the game correctly and then, like.
I think that's part of why I don't want to know who the traitors are.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to play with the faithfuls. I would like to be sitting here trying to figure out who the, so that at that point, if the traitors win, then I'm like, oh no, the traitors won. You know, we lost. We're the faithfuls, right?
Yeah.
So that we're rooting for the faithfuls, because I feel like last season with Ceri, you know, being the fabulous bitch she is, and with Phaedra being the fabulous bitch she is, we are stuck in the zone of rooting for the traitors, especially when we get mostly traitors in the confessional chair. We get to know the traitors better than we get to know the faithful.
That's true.
And so really and truly, it's as a default, like you are on most reality shows, you root for the people who are your storytellers. You root for your narrator. And the narrators are the traitors because they're the ones that have the full picture.
Yeah. And I don't think necessarily, I think the problem was we did have elements of this whole CT and Trishel story, right? And that was definitely how it was being played towards the end of this episode in terms of like giving that a conclusion. But I don't think it was fleshed out enough to be the satisfying conclusion that we wanted from this season, right?
The issue that I had with just them winning is because it seemed very much like they knew full well that MJ wasn't a traitor, and they just gave her the middle finger at the end. That to me was insulting, because that meant that they weren't in it for the faithfuls. They were in it for themselves.
I think that's true. Okay, so spoiler alert, it gets down to a point where, as you're alluding to, it gets down to a point where there are it's just faithfuls left with CT, Trishel, and MJ.
Right.
Now, they can, when they make the decision at the end to continue voting, and MJ is shocked by this and thinks that, like, oh, guys, we all figured out that we're faithfuls, like, we're going to end the game, etc. And MJ is really put off by the fact that they want to keep voting. Like, I understand and don't understand it. Like, I understand why MJ is upset. Sport and
yeah,
trust, and she is upset when we get to the reunion.
She is salty in that reunion.
Yeah, which I totally understand. From the little I know of MJ outside of this show, that it made a lot of sense.
But like, I get it too. Like, I would feel very irritated if someone said, "Screw you, you're not winning with us."
Yeah,
because to me, at that point, it's
it felt very emotional and on their end.
Yes.
And that's, I think, was the issue. Because even I think CT says, like, the only one I trust to go to the end with is her, meaning Trishel. And it's like, that's kind of mean. You know what I mean? Like, but I would
especially argue, after Trishel just voted for CT.
Yeah. Here's the thing. As a viewer, I don't know if MJ necessarily deserved to win.
No, I don't think so necessarily. But I think when you get to the end, like that.
Yeah, she was a little bit of a goat to me. And that's kind of like where I didn't mind it as much. And I also think there is sort of a strategical part to the Fire of Truth elements where, like, you in theory, like, while I don't think they truly believed MJ was a traitor, I agree with you on that. I think from a statistical standpoint, you kind of want to end with two people.
Sure.
Because if you're a faithful ending with another person, and it's just one other person, that statistically gives you a better chance of winning. Because if you end with three people, only one of the other two has to be a traitor for it to just completely blow up in your face.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the other frustration, is that the way that this Fire of Truth, which we haven't really saw, like, played out to its fullest last season, because they were so fully convinced that Ceri was a faithful, to where it's like they just were fine with ending it there. etc. But it's like, yeah, you kind of want to narrow it down to only two people from like a, if it's this sort of like strategic style gameplay. I was so annoyed, spoiler alert, with when they get to the final four, that started the Fire of Truth, and Kate's the only one that wants to end the game.
Like, girl.
It's like when they had just killed, or when they had just banished Sandra. Sandra reveals herself as not a traitor.
Right, and they know, like, that somebody was murdered the night before.
Right.
So clearly there was a traitor.
So, but that's, but also, so therefore the only way that Kate would have been able to win is if she count down with two people, with another person, right?
Yeah.
She would have had to have lasted. The only way she would, for Kate to win in my mind, was to convince MJ that she was not a traitor and have them pick off CT and Trishel.
I also feel like, because of that, I feel like the only way that traitors can win is if they end up with two at the end.
Right. That's what, yeah. So it's like, that's...
Because at least Ciri was able to sacrifice Ari last season.
Because if they... Okay, so if at the Final Four, let's say that she was able to convince MJ and, like, Trishel or whatever to cut CT, right? But then CT would then have to reveal that he was a faithful.
Right.
And so once he does that, it's like, well, we still don't have a traitor, so then you have to vote again. And then you have to hopefully then, like, if you're Kate, get MJ to vote for Trishel.
But that would be incredibly difficult to do, because if you orchestrated the first vote out, then they're immediately going to turn to you and go, well, clearly you're the fucking traitor.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like there was no...
That's what I think. Like, I think it's actually impossible for a single traitor to get to the Fire of Truth and win.
Right. Exactly. Which makes it also, like, maybe incentivizes now, don't be so quick to turn on the traitors, right?
Yeah.
And, like, maybe that, again, going back to it, I think Dan really, like, if we're going to talk about how the game went, like, towards
it
the
end. It was Dan.
It was because of Dan's, like, throwing under a poverty in Phaedra.
Well, and it didn't even start there. Again, it's the vote for Bergy.
Sure.
He got too fucking greedy on the vote for Bergy, knowing they already fucking knew that Bergy had a shield.
Yeah.
And they went for him anyway. And it's just that was what that finished the season.
Because really, was there any way for Kate to win this? Do you, like,
no.
In terms of, like, what was played out? I also now think, in retrospect, like, I didn't really understand the whole numbers part of that final Fire of Truth until it happened, right?
Yeah. So
of what you're saying, like, you have to end with, like, one person if you're the traitor. And now that I think about it, like, I actually think it was a big mistake to kill Sheree in, like,
yeah,
Kate's last kill, because it's like, you literally, I get that you were like, well, it's either her or Trishel, and Trishel could maybe be viewed as a traitor, possibly, so I might keep, I, you know, Sheree's not going to get viewed as a traitor necessarily. It's like,
but the second that I walked,
you needed that number.
Yeah, you need, like, we knew at this point the dividing line is the gamers versus the Bravos.
Yeah.
Sandra kind of floated in the middle. But I think Sandra, the best move to make would have been kill off Trishel.
Mm-hmm.
Because
leave CT on his own.
Because CT doesn't argue well.
Yeah, for the most part.
So he wouldn't have been someone that's going to point the finger at you at the final table.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other people that are left maybe aren't going to point a finger your direction anyway. So you do that, get Sandra out, then it's CT, MJ, Sheree, and Kate in the final four.
Right.
Then we point at CT. Then we point at MJ.
Or point at MJ, yeah.
And then it's Sheree and Kate in the final two, and Kate walks away with the money.
Well, Sheree is... seemingly, when she gets her kill letter, is convinced that she was on the track of Kate being the traitor anyways. Which, I mean, like, could be true, could be... her being, like, her looking at Phaedra with that pouty face, like, it's like, okay, Sheree. I mean, like, it was also pretty obvious that Kate was a traitor. It's hard to, like, yeah. I don't think Kate played this well at all towards the
end.
But
she was also served the shit sandwich.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what more.
Yeah.
I wonder, I really wonder what happened if, like, different things played out. Like, if, like, Phaedra chose someone other than Kate to be recruited. If, what would have happened if Poverty didn't choose Peter to be recruited and chose, like, some, like, maybe a Sandra or something. Like, it could be a different game in terms of that. Like, it's coulda, woulda, shoulda to a certain extent, but.
Yeah.
Can we talk about also that fucking final mission?
Yeah.
And how fucking. I mean, at that point, CT deserved to win just for carrying that final mission.
Well, but also, they all deserve to lose for missing the, like, literally, they were walking up that cliff, and I go, oh, look, there's four numbers written there. Why is there four numbers written there? Huh, that's interesting.
But no one pays attention.
Nobody paid attention to it. And I'm like, that's going to be important.
It seemed like it took forever to figure that, like, they had an hour to traverse this, like, beach or whatever to then get onto a giant boat and raise a sail.
They did not have an hour. They had, like, 5 years. Yeah. Because I swear to God, there's no way that only took an hour.
And then, like, they get the option to do all these, like, side tasks, which they, of course, they end up taking. And it just, again, I need an insider for that show to be like, okay, y'all are fudging this shit, right? Like, there's no...
Yeah.
Oh, conveniently, with 10 seconds left, you guys always end, like, complete the challenge. Okay, all right. Like, it's, I think they need to figure out, if I'm restructuring this game in any way, they need to figure out a way to make the challenges mean something in a way that's actually vital.
Yes.
And so, and to where they don't have to just be like, you did it. Like, yeah. Yay.
Like, maybe there's an MVP that everybody votes for. Then they get, and they win money.
Right.
For each challenge.
Or
they
something.
Do it at the round table. Like, everybody votes for an MVP for the challenge. And then they win money, extra money on top of.
Right.
You know?
Because unless they fully dumbed down this challenge, like, and unless they thought it was, unless they had planned it to be much bigger or something, like, and saw that, like, CT and Trishel were the only people that, like, could actually do anything, they had to have just been like,
it was rough.
Okay, just have them, like, walk a little bit down this path, and then, like,
I feel like just off camera there was people with signs that were running from way, they're like, can you bring in the yacht?
Yeah.
It's, like, way too far away.
Well, and then they have to, okay, there's a part where they have to rappel off of a cliff with, like, 15 minutes left. And I was like, it takes 15 minutes just to get them hooked up to this thing.
And then they get down to the bottom and they're like, oh, wait, the last $10,000, you have to, like, swim through this underwater cavern. And I'm like, you've got to swim halfway across the Atlantic to that boat over there. But like, what are you doing?
But they end up getting in, like, a platoon boat or some, like, one of the, like, sort of, like, safety boats or something.
But still, that takes a while. That's, like, at least a 5 minute thing.
It's like, Jesus Christ. I was so, like, again, fix that element of it. Like, and we could maybe get to a better place. I was also...
I liked it better last season when Alan roasted them for sucking at the challenges.
Yeah.
It was like, and you only... Like, give me weakest link energy. You managed to bank only 3 cents out of the possible $50,000. Fuck you, you idiots. Like, get her.
Yeah. Also, so they do, right before they do the Fire of Truth, they do another round table to do an elimination. I was so sad that Sandra got cut, like, right before.
Yeah.
And it was kind of shitty how it happened, of, like, where, again, unless CT, they don't really dive into this at the reunion, and it is kind of my frustration a little bit in terms of the reunion, where, because it was Andy, I think Andy doesn't know yet how to ask these questions. Like, what did CT actually believe Sandra was a traitor, or was it just, again, to take down numbers?
It felt very much like numbers.
That's what I kind of felt, too, because I don't know why he actually believed it when they're driving back from the challenge, and Kate and CT are, like, Kate's discussing, like, maybe taking out Sandra, right? Like, to try to throw that out there. CT immediately takes that to Sandra. Sandra tells Kate what CT told her. And then Kate's like, I wasn't throwing your name out there. It was actually him that was doing it. And then Sandra takes that back to CT. And then CT's like, what the fuck? Like, but he doesn't really, like, Kate's fucking lying. Like, Kate's clearly lying, yeah. Right? So it's like, why is his instinct to be like, Sandra might be lying to me? I don't get that. Like,
because Sandra decided to play Survivor.
Right.
Because that was a Survivor scramble. That looked exactly like a Survivor scramble. And so I was like, okay, Sandra's playing Survivor. This is the game she knows how to play.
Yeah.
But nobody else on this cast knows how to play that. So, because the challenge doesn't work like with a vote off type thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They lose a challenge and that's how they get off, right? I've never watched the challenge, so I don't know.
Oh, I haven't watched it in a long, long, long time. Like
do people get eliminated?
Yes, they do. But
so it's just you suck in the challenge, you go home.
I think they do it differently every time.
Okay.
It depends. And I know they do. It's usually like a final, like one. It's like a duel or like a comp.
Is that what the banana backpack is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've done it like that before. Again, I would love to go back and watch the challenge because I feel like it would be something you and I would both be interested in. The problem is there's like 40 seasons of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty.
A lot.
A lot. But yeah, it's like it did, and you could tell Sandra was, I think, very frustrated that like she just kind of got lied on at the end, and therefore she had no way to sort of like fight.
Yeah,
and her speech at the roundtable was actually pretty like impassioned, like, and I thought really well done.
Well, when she gave that speech, I was like, oh, well, so nobody's going to vote for her now, right?
Yeah.
So who are they going to vote for? Oh, they're still voting for her. Great. Cool.
Awesome. Well, and then Trishel only votes for her because she gets like scared off by the fact that CT is like voting for her when the plan was Kate. And so therefore, yeah, like she gets like sidetracked by it, which I will say gives some credence to her idea that she didn't always target the people of color. She didn't want Sandra out seemingly at that point.
Theoretically, but her vote says otherwise.
I know. Yeah, she just went with the crowd. Just like a racist.
Just like a racist.
I'm kidding. Also, when Sandra's in her rant going, talking about Kate going, her whole outfit is saying traitor, and Kate's like, oh, yeah. Like, like that was a fun enough moment. Yeah, Sandra leaving at the end kind of sucked because I would have liked to see Sandra have a moment at the end to win and be a part of that. But hey, it is what it is. We then go, like I said, go to the Fire of Truth, where again, Kate like wanting to end the game. I was like,
way to indicate you're the traitor.
Yeah. And I was just like, wait a minute. Like literally when Alan's going around asking the other people why they wanted to vote again, MJ literally is like, well, we didn't just get rid of a traitor, so there must be a traitor left.
Yeah.
There was a murder. And I don't know if Kate even realized in the moment how much she fucked up.
I think she did, because the way she was talking was like, honestly, I don't feel like I should win.
Yeah.
So I'm going to like out myself.
I think she was here. I think she likes this game in terms of.
I think she likes the game and she thought she would like being a traitor and ended up hating it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so she was like, I don't want to fucking win like this. This is bullshit. I hate this.
Congrats, guys. Like, literally, like, it was like, okay. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, it was strange. And this is, and then, so then, like I said before, they think they're going to all end it together, but then CT and Trishel decide to vote again. I was genuinely shocked when Trishel voted for CT.
I was too.
And I actually thought MJ should have just done more work at that point to then flip.
I don't know why CT didn't flip.
Right. Well, and they...
I'm not going, well, you're the only person I trust, to the person that's actively digging a dagger out of my back.
Right.
Like, fuck you.
I was annoyed at the reunion when Andy asked, like, MJ's like, well, MJ, you're so upset, but, like, why didn't you flip your vote on the second vote or whatever? It's like, why aren't you asking that to CT, who just got voted against?
Right.
Why he didn't then flip on Trishel?
Yeah, that was dumb.
You know what I mean? Like, that could have...
Andy doesn't know how competition games work.
Sure. Yeah. But it's like... And then... They end up getting back together on the same page because CT and Trishel still have enough of a bond and all that. But, like, yeah, it was... I felt bad for MJ, and I still thought it was a interesting enough ending to where, like, it was somewhat satisfying, but definitely... I mean, here's the thing. The satisfying ending to this season would have been Phaedra winning, and then...
That wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. And so, therefore, it's kind of hard.
Yeah. You know?
The reunion, we're not going to get too, like, heavily in-depth into, because, like I said, I don't think there's a lot there.
No.
And I think they're kind of still trying to figure out what they want to do with the reunion, because it is in this weird realm of, like, it's a competition show, but we're treating it like a Housewives reunion.
Well, the thing is that the first season kind of demanded a reunion, and the second season really didn't need it.
No, and I was kind of frustrated. They were definitely, like, in the buildup in, like, the public life, it felt like it was going to be way more, like, cutthroat than it actually was. Like, didn't, like, Tamara, like, have, like, issue with poverty or something over, like, the Housewives versus the, like, gamers thing? And then, like, it never came up.
Right, like, and she was, like, seemingly very upset at Phaedra for killing her.
And just didn't, like, confront her on it.
And she was actively given a moment to do it and didn't really... Because Andy asked her about her, like, being so emotional.
Yeah.
And nothing. Nothing happened.
No. I thought it was very fascinating watching Dan not understand how these reunions work.
Yeah.
In general on Bravo. Where he thought, again, that he could just, like, explain his thought process from a game perspective. And he had to deal with Phaedra across from him being like, yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Uh-huh.
And, like, not knowing how to take... Like, you could tell in his brain, it's like, guys, it's not... like, but it's a game. And it's like... Yeah. But it's not. Like, you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah.
It is natural for somebody when you screw them over to be really upset with you. You know what I mean? And so, like...
Yeah.
When you have these game players that are so... they kind of talk about it a little bit about how, like, the game players are so used to playing games together to where it's just like...
Yeah.
They view it as a sport. And well, so therefore...
Especially people like Trishel and CT and Bananas who are used to the challenge where it's like, oh, well, I'll win next season.
Yeah.
It's fine. You take it this season, I'll do it next season. Like, who gives a shit, right, at that point? But it's like most of these people don't have that opportunity, but like they're also getting paychecks for being on reality television.
Right.
Like all the Bravo people are getting paychecks, like actively. So like, I don't know. It's a weird situation.
Yeah,
playing like I kind of agree in having all reality TV stars, but I also kind of liked having the normals in the mix.
There's a part of me that thinks that too. Yeah,
you know, like. Having the civilians last season was an interesting mix, especially because some of them were traitors and like there was that weird like falling on your own sword thing that happened last season.
Yeah.
We didn't really get anything like that this season.
Yeah.
And it was just Phaedra being fabulous for however many episodes.
Yeah. I thought, and I think Dan didn't realize he kind of needed to grovel. Like he just needed to kind of like growl, be like, I'm so sorry. I like you though. And like, you know, I would have done it differently. Like he needed to watch some Housewives reunions and be like, this is the formula of how this works. I like that they gave Peppermint a little bit of a moment to talk about like the reason she came onto the show and like fighting for trans issues.
Yep.
I thought it was very interesting that Trishel shut the fuck up during her segment.
Yeah.
Like, did not say a word.
And like I alluded to earlier, Trishel has since made a post about...
she said it on Watch What Happens Live.
On Watch What Happens Live, doing some sensitivity training and like based on diversity and stuff like that. And just learning about other communities and how to get rid of those implicit biases.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly... If she's, it's like, she's actively putting money into doing this work, good for her.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing a changed Trishel.
Yeah. And this has been the little I've watched of Trishel, though, I do remember there is a... This is kind of a longstanding thing with her, like when she was on the challenge with some of the black women. Like, so she had exhibited this a lot in the past. And so, like,
But is the challenge have the same sort of audience that the Traitors does, to where she was able to see out from the fans?
No. And this would have been, especially during an era where, like, this would have been definitely pre-George Floyd, in a way where the dialogue about, like microaggressions, too, and like sort of, like, that becoming into the forefront, like, wasn't in people's minds. Not to say it gives her a pass in any way, because she was a terrible person to people on the challenge. But, like, yeah, like, I'm with you. I think, like, if she actually takes the initiative with this, I think nothing but good can come out of it. And I like her. I just don't like, like the way she moves sometimes. And so if she can fix that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And like I have been saying, I want an all drag queen version of this show.
Oh, yeah.
Bring Peppermint back. I want to see Willem on this shit. I want to see Bob the Drag Queen on this shit. I want to see some queens that have never been on Drag Race. You know, like maybe a Coco Peru would be interesting. I want to see more queer representation, especially on a show that is like hosted by one of the most like amazing queer icons that we have right now, which is Alan Cumming.
You're going to be protected, like, in that regard, which is nice.
Right. So, I mean, giving that space and really just going, let's be fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really hope Peppermint's opened that door. And so, yeah, it'll be really good to see. That was our thoughts overall. What do we think generally of this season? I think I don't know gameplay wise if it's as good as the first season, now that I think about it, but like entertainment wise, absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 5 stars will be sat for season 3. And honestly, I'm probably going to be going back and watching all of the UK seasons. Mm-hmm. Australia has one. I think Canada has Traitors. So I'm just going to go binge all of those seasons and enjoy the fabulosity.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're talking parts 2 and 3 of the Married to Medicine reunion. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
And, you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Man.
That's right.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And if you're anything like us, you live your life out loud.
And when it comes to issues of discrimination, inequity, and outright bigotry, we use every platform we have to speak out against systems of oppression that perpetrate violence against marginalized groups.
That's why we are so proud to wear designs from the Survivors Know merch store. Their team has created designs that feature unapologetic, empowering, and survivor-centered messaging that range from mild,
like accountability is love and toxicity is not on the menu,
to a little more spicy,
like one of my favorites, fuck your laws, fuck your system, transformative justice now, which has a cute little happy flower on it.
Each design is available on a variety of items, from t-shirts and hoodies to bags, blankets, magnets, and even stickers. And as more items become available, the options will continue to grow.
100% of the proceeds go back into supporting the amazing work done at Survivors Know to support survivors, workers, and survivor advocates by organizing, challenging the status quo, and creating alternatives to the systems that fail us.
Support Survivors Know by shopping today at survivorsknow.threadless.com.
That's survivorsknow.threadless.com.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and His Envy. Let's head down to Atlanta, where the men roast Kemma and Sweet Tea tries and fails to roast Heavenly on Married to Medicine.
Married to Medicine, the last two parts of the reunion. This was a good reunion, I would say. I mean, it's I like this cast a lot. Like,
yeah.
I think, like, even like with all the, like, I actually hope nothing gets changed because of Atlanta for the most part with this cast. Like,
yeah.
I mean, ideally, like, you know, could they use the talent on Atlanta? 1,000%. But I also think I really don't want Phaedra to move at all, as much as, like, that. I know that's been, like, theorized by people. Like, I don't want, like, I think Quad, luckily, it seems, has, like, found some way to stay back in their good graces.
You know, oddly enough, I do miss Contessa.
I feel like either you said that or someone I saw tweet about that today, and I was like, you know what? I do think you could bring Contessa back. I always liked, well, that's not true.
I didn't always like Contessa.
No.
I didn't like her at the beginning.
She was a lot at times.
But the last, like, two seasons, I really enjoyed her.
Yeah. I think the dynamic is so important on this show in particular. Like, this show thrives off of having people that, like, have a good banter with each other and work with each other. And so, like,
well, especially because she wasn't afraid to bring it to Heavenly.
Yes. And
because Heavenly needs to be checked often.
Yeah. Because I almost feel like Toya's not even willing to do it anymore. Yeah. Not that she's not willing, maybe, necessarily.
But she's tired, like, sometimes.
It's kind of like Heavenly's Heavenly. I think at one point here, Heavenly's like, yeah, I mean, Toya knows that, you know, me and her, it's good. You know, we, you know, shade each other, but it's not like anything deep or anything like that. And it's like, I like that, but also I need sometimes.
But, like, I need the drama of bringing everyone over into your fucking theater room and sitting down and watching this, like, Heavenly roast session.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then going, now, bitch, you know that was not okay.
Oh, man. But to speak to the Quad point, so we come from the second episode in of Quad crying to Jackie about, I would never, you know, do what I did and, like, disseminate that do what you think I did and, like, disseminate that video and all that stuff. But they seem to get to, like, a good enough place where they hug it out, and Jackie tells her she just needs to do better and communicate more. I don't know if Quad, I will say this. I think she does a good job here with Jackie and Simone, because then she goes into Simone's dressing room and they have a discussion. They make up as well.
I think Quad is very good at the politics of this group.
Yes.
And she's very good at saying things that sound nice and then not necessarily giving them what they want, which I think is what they clocked and why they were mad at her this season, because they were like, you've been doing this for a decade, bitch.
Right. And I feel like with Simone, it was still a place of, like, we'll see.
Yeah.
I want to see actions.
Well, and that's how Toya felt, too. It was like, words are words, but I need action.
Yeah.
Which is a theme this week, because we hear that from Katie on Vanderpump Rules as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's very much a, you can say what you will, but, like, I need you to actually follow that up with action.
And it was weird to seeing Quad on Watch What Happens Live with Dr. Wendy, where it was like, I don't know where, it could just be politicking.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's kind of, like, there's an unsurety there. And also, Quad calling out Andy on Watch What Happens Live and basically being like, you didn't ask any questions about, like, did you guys feel bad for how you treated her in Napa and all that stuff? And Andy's like, I thought we did kind of go into that. And she's like, no.
No, he didn't. Well, and I love how nobody brought up the fact that, like, Greg was sprung on her out of nowhere.
There is a moment where Quad makes a point to bring it up herself, but you're right. They don't really bring up the, like,
why Quad wasn't in the first, like, three episodes.
Yeah, and it's like, and you can even do it in, like, a fourth wall way of being like,
right,
do you ladies understand how hard it would be for Quad to, like, be around a group that contains her ex-husband's new wife?
Well, sure, but that's not the issue. Sweet Tea is not the issue. It's about the fact that Greg was abusive as fuck.
Right.
And, like, why is she having to be on this show with her abuser?
They're not going to bring that up again. Because she brings it up to Carlos King, right, in that interview where we kind of, like, made more sense of just, like, yeah, I can understand, like, if they didn't acknowledge, like, her feelings in terms of that.
Well,
but,
and,
like,
the thing is if you're only watching the show and you're not paying attention to anything outside of it, it is very easy to fall into the trap. I did the same thing earlier in the season of falling into the trap of going, well, this was really equal. So really, because that's how the show presented it.
Yeah.
They specifically discussed it at the reunion as this was mutual abuse.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
Well, and the moment also I mentioned of Quad bringing it up, now that I think about it, it's even worse because like they asked Greg.
Yeah.
How does it feel being on this stage across from your ex-wife? And it's like, and Quad makes the point to say, like, well, he made the choice to come on this show. He right. knew I was on this show already.
Yeah.
Like, and that's where it's like, I don't, like, that's where I feel the sympathy for Quad. It's like, Quad didn't ask for Greg to come back.
Yeah.
Like he, she didn't, you know, they made the choice to cast Sweet Tea for the sole purpose of the fact, like, not to knock on Sweet Tea, but it's like you wouldn't have necessarily have been casted if you weren't marrying Greg.
Right. Well, and Heavenly pushed for it.
Yeah.
Like, Heavenly got her on the show.
And so why are also we, like, acting as though, like, it's awkward for Greg? If Greg didn't want to, they don't have to be here.
Yeah. Well, and I think we talked about it before, but, like, I wish the conversation at that final dinner in Hilton Head had come up about how they framed Greg and Sweet Tea being back in the group
mm-hmm.
and Quad not being there and how this was a level up type thing.
Oh,
and
Cecil,
it was gross.
Cecil was backtracking hard when they brought that up about like, you know, I'm just glad to see, you know, Greg happy and et cetera, but I love Quad. That's not what you meant when you said that he leveled up with Sweet Tea.
Like, it was really disgusting. And honestly, I'm frustrated in the way that this whole cast seems to have welcomed Greg back in, knowing what he did to Quad.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't really expect Quad to just like suck it up.
Right. And they kind of acted like she should.
Yeah. As much as I also do like get frustrated with Quad being like, I have no issue with Sweet Tea while constantly dragging her. Like I get like, and that is kind of annoying.
But
like,
that's just shade.
But like, also, I wouldn't expect Quad to not have an issue with Sweet Tea. Not to say that like Sweet Tea is like, it's the coming on the show.
Right.
Because to me, like, that's an active move that's, like, not about, like...
Right.
It's the thing of the... And then, like, Sweet Tea and Greg then being like, well, I don't know why it keeps getting brought up. It's like, well, you guys know the environment you're in, and you know you're on this show, and, like...
Like, you act like we're supposed to ignore it?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, if Apollo had not gone to jail, had gotten remarried and brought his new wife on Atlanta when Phaedra was still there, it would have been fucking... like World War III.
Right.
Like, we know what we're doing. Let's not act like we don't know what show we're on.
It's kind of, now that I think about it, it's kind of giving the same vibe of like Andy being like, look, we cast in Melissa Gorga because, you know, I thought she, you know, looked really good and she had a nice house. It's like,
okay, but you casted her because she was like, you knew it was going to cause problems with Teresa. You did it to get a rise out of her because you liked the rise you got out of her at the beginning of season one with the table flip. You wanted more of that.
So it's like, let's not play stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy asks, they do a package about Sweet Tea, and then they ask, Andy asks about her health. She says she's doing better after the surgery, but she's still unsure whether she's infertile because you have to go through a certain period of time. And if you can't get pregnant by that point, you're considered infertile. Then, oh my God, this is where her and Quad get into it because Andy asks a question about Quad implying that Sweet Tea buys fake designer labels and specifically that she gets her clothes in the mall down in the parking lot from the African man.
Wild.
And the way they show the clip on Watch Heaven's Live, because it was when her and Heavenly were on it, and she like sets Heavenly up to tell the story basically, and Quad just being like, I agree with that as well. Like,
well, and the thing is that Heavenly acts like it's not a big deal. She like sits there at the reunion, it's like, well, that's what you told me. And like, I mean, you said you went and bought it out of his trunk.
Because you wanted like, nicer things.
And you wanted, and was like, girl, why are you acting like she went to Target?
The way, well, the amount of times Heavenly says that she's, that like Sweet Tea said something to her, and Sweet Tea's like, I never said that. I literally never said, like.
And the thing is I don't know who to trust because I know they're both fucking liars.
Yeah. Quad's like, well, it came across my desk. And Sweetie goes, yeah, because you were guys, talking about me.
It came across my desk. It's wild.
Andy at one point goes, so Quad called your style jivey. And Sweetie goes, look, Quad doesn't know me. And Quad goes, but I have a nice pair of eyes, 2020 fish.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. It was like, yeah. And they just sort of like going back and forth, being like, why do you keep going after me on social media? And Quad just being like, I'm not pressed by you, sweetheart, and blah, blah, blah. Andy then grabbed, I don't know what was on the table in front of him. It looked like banana bread or some like, there was some like sweet like stuff or whatever.
Something, yeah.
And so he literally grabs like a piece of banana bread and just goes back and snacks as like.
I bet he wish he had those snacks when Dorit was making him yawn on Beverly Hills.
Oh, yeah. He needed the sugar up.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Toya tries to, like, have Sweet Tea's back at one point and goes, Quad, why did you say you don't think she fits in with the group? And Quad's like, I mean, a number of people have said that. And then Heavily goes, I mean, all of us have said that. It's like, wow.
Like, here's the thing. I think she doesn't fit in the group this season because she is so busy focusing on the fact that there's an age gap. But there's not an age gap between everyone. She's a similar age to Toya.
Right.
You know, she's a similar age to Quad if they could get over that difference. Right. Like, she's not that much. Like, she's a little bit younger than me. She's your age, I think.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Early 30s. So, like, girl, get over yourself. It's not that fucking difficult to get along with people that are not your same age.
Yeah. I agree. So I did love, so Andy literally, well, Andy does kind of do the, like, to Toya, like, I mean, if you were in Quad's situation, like, on this season, like, you know, and, you know, Eugene had remarried and brought in whatever, Toya goes, first of all, I'm an advocate of this show, and that drama would be great. And I love that Toya's just like, do it for the check, girl. Like, it's, like.
I love how Toya says that now, but she would be fucking pissed.
Oh, 1,000%. Like.
But I think that she says that because she's like, yeah, I know I'd be fucking pissed. I'd be furious. And I'm great TV when I'm furious.
Yeah.
So fucking do it.
This then transitions to, like, why Sweet Tea and Heavenly have their issue and, like, all the stuff that Sweet Tea brings up, all the stuff Heavenly said about their relationship or whatever. Andy points out how she called Dr. G older than dirt. But then we figure out that there's only like a 2-year age difference between Heavenly and Dr. G. So it's like, what do you mean by that?
To be fair, Heavenly looks much younger than Dr. G.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I actually don't think G's even that old.
Doesn't look old. He just doesn't look young either.
No. Yeah. It's the age difference more than it is.
Right.
You know. Then Andy brings up that Sweet Tea was on Instagram basically bringing up the Mariah rumors again.
Ooh.
And basically saying that Heavenly confided in her that she was worried when Mariah said it originally because she thought there was, like, mm-hmm. And so you were kind of.
Mariah said recently that Damon came to her directly.
And said, don't say
and
it.
And asked her not to come forward with the receipts.
Here's my thing.
Now, do we trust Mariah?
I don't.
I trust her a little bit, but not necessarily completely.
Yeah. Here's my thing. Maybe I am completely wrong on this. I don't see Damon as the type of person that would cheat. I actually don't see Damon as someone who would cheat on Heavenly.
I see Damon as someone who would get caught up in something that he didn't know was going to go that far.
Right.
I don't think he would ever initiate anything that would never do it intentionally, but I guarantee you he would get caught in a situation that went way further than he ever wanted it to.
Possibly.
That I can see.
Yeah. And yeah.
At a club.
Well, sure.
Like, maybe getting a private dance in a back room and some shit went further than it should have. That sort of thing is something that I can see happening with Damon because I feel like Damon doesn't necessarily feel comfortable all the time putting his foot down. And so if someone was maybe pushing further than they should have with him and he didn't tell them no.
Maybe.
I can see things going further and then him getting to a point where he did have to put an end to it, but it went further than he should have let it. You know what I mean? That's a scenario that I completely created in my head that I can understand if that's how that transpired. But I don't think that constitutes as cheating. I think he needed to go home and say, Heavenly, this is what happened.
Sure.
And I didn't mean for it to go like this. And she made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm... You trust Mariah a little more than I do, generally. And
a little bit, but that's because I want her back on this show.
Sure.
Like, I just, I'm sorry. You cannot tell me that the woman that says, you're not even married to Madison, my love, doesn't need to be back on this goddamn show.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I want her back, but like.
Yeah. I need her back.
But
with a quickness.
So as this is, because it's about Sweet Tea bringing this up, Damon, I thought Damon came off very well in terms of defending himself backstage with the other men, because he goes up to Greg. Well, he tells Greg, like I've known you for 10 years. Like, if you think I'm a cheater, then say it. And Greg's like, bro, I don't know what you're doing. And it's like, and Damon's like, no, don't do that shit. Like, either you think I'm a cheater or you don't. So, like, be honest with you. And he presses Greg pretty hard on it. And Greg, like, says that he doesn't think that. So, like, I think Damon doesn't come off guilty to me. Like, he doesn't.
Sure.
Like, there, even at the, and at the time, too, I never felt that in terms of, like, his, like, handling of everything. And so, and again, maybe because he was able to get Mariah a certain way. But, like.
Maybe.
You know, it's hard to say. So Sweet Tea asks, like, what the issue is with Heavenly, you know, why are you, you know, so obsessed with, like, my relationship? And Heavenly's like, look, my issue came when she told me that she was being controlled, which
she did.
She did say that. Like, and when she had the conversation, you know, Heavenly makes other accusations of things that she claims that, like, Greg did were, and in this, like, reunion where, again, Sweet Tea's like, I never said that, but it's like, there is stuff of you saying, you literally said Quad has a point on certain things.
Right.
And so,
which to me is a giant red flag. Here's the thing. I was with Heavenly on this fight, because if someone tells me that, I'm not going to be super comfortable. Like, I'm still going to show up, right? Yeah. I'm going to still do the things. Heavenly was way too loud with it, but that's Heavenly.
She wanted to get her a plan B, as she said. She was like, join Dr. Heavenly University. Let me show you how to stack your money like Quad did.
But she's right, though.
Yeah.
Especially in a situation like this, like, put your money, all your little checks from the government that you get, because you're working for the government. I think she works for the IRS or something. And, like, take your little money, put it to the side in your own little bank account that Greg doesn't have access to.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, if something happens, you need to be able to take that money and walk.
Yeah. And like...
And that is something we, like, women, especially Black women, are told this from a young age. This is something that, like, Wendy Williams has talked about, this sort of thing. Having your own bag, having your own money to the side, like, that nobody else has access to, that nobody else really knows about.
When they ask Greg later about, because I guess Greg didn't take Phaedra's advice in terms of getting a prenup, and like, and being like, and Andy literally lays out, I mean, your new wife did say that she likes your bag, and he goes, I like her bag too. I'm like, but does she have a bag? Like, at least from what we can tell, right? It just doesn't seem that way. It seems like she wants a man to support her financially. That sounds like, you know, but to, like, be that element of the relationship, right?
Yeah.
And like you're saying, like, it doesn't lend well when those things then go bad.
Right.
It's just like, you want to have a backup plan.
Yeah.
And so I, like I said, the merits of what Heavenly is saying, I think are correct for the most part with the Sweet Tea stuff. I think the way Heavenly handled it.
But that's Heavenly.
Yeah.
When has she ever handled things correctly?
Yeah. So they take a break at one point, and then they bring out Alicia to join them on stage. Oh my God. Andy asks Alicia how her first season went, and Alicia just goes, Well, it was like being on the psych ward during residency. Everyone was loud and screaming, and you could tell like they were starting to get like, oh, okay, like really offended. But it's like, you guys are like, again, Simone, you like Andy has to get his hearing checked every reunion. Like, you scream a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Alicia, well, she might say otherwise, but I think Alicia hasn't had to be like very vocal in her life in terms of like,
yeah,
in terms of a relationship. So when you're around all these other women, like, yeah, you have to be a little more like opinionated and out there. And I thought she did a good job of that this season for the most part.
Yeah, especially when you're trained to keep your emotions to yourself and your opinions to yourself.
Yeah. Andy asked a fan question about like, so Alicia cooks and cleans and blah, 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 you know, does all this stuff. What exactly does Kemma do besides pass judgment on American women? Which, yeah.
Accurate. I would like the answer to that question.
We try to get it later and it doesn't like go well. I feel it doesn't go well for Kemma. But
at all.
She basically, Alicia tries to say that he doesn't pass judgment, but just holds true to what he believes in. I guess, but like.
No, no. I ain't even giving her that. No bye.
They get sort of discussion about like general stuff. Simone says that the boys are doing well with their new living situation and they're keeping up with everything and it's going well. Andy talks to Tori about like the sex talk with the boys, which I love that they like sort of get into that discussion, how like open the dialogue is. She says at one point she goes up to Avery and she's like, do you need me to wipe your Google search? And he's like, yeah, mom. Like, I was looking for like boobs and like whatever.
It's so funny. Like your early explorations into that, like how stupid you are.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's real funny. Like just to think back, like you just Googling shit and you just, and the thing is that you'll Google.
Well, they're not teaching it in school.
No, that's true. That's true. They don't teach you, you know, how to safely look at porn 101. Like, that's not something you're learning in sixth grade.
Sure. And like, yeah, I like the dialogue Toy and Eugene have with the boys in terms of that.
Yeah.
Quad telling that story about like when Avery was younger and like when Toya and her were good, where like Quad picks him up and he like immediately unzips her top.
That to me was awkward. Like, honestly, that was weird to me. How she was like, okay, he knows what he wants. That is a baby, ma'am.
Yeah.
Why are we sexualizing children?
Maybe knowing what he wants for, you know, other, I don't know how young this, I'm assuming like toddler age was when this happened. Speaking of that, whoever was like the eagle-eyed person, I think it was Andy or it was somebody noticing that there was infant formula in Heavenly's kitchen. Like,
there were people that thought that Heavenly had a secret grandchild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were like theorizing that, but Heavenly claims that it's because Damon's allergic to milk, and so he uses the infant formula
because it's lactose free
for like his cereal and stuff like that. Which,
but
like,
it's like you can just buy almond milk.
Well, so I guess
like,
does it have lactose?
No, the whole point of the soy milk and almond milk and all of that stuff is that it's lactose free.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like, why are you taking infant formula, which is number one, more expensive, and also needed by mothers.
Yeah.
Off the shelf.
For your cereal. Which you could eat any other breakfast item.
That's some fucking privileged-ass shit to me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Oh, my God. So then Andy asked about, like, so how has it been, like, have you been trying to reach out to your sister, right?
Because
we saw some of the stuff of, like, Heavenly, you know, wanting to sort of repair that relationship for, her, you know, her mother's sake, and because it's one of her mother's dying wishes. The way she turns it around on Sweet Tea and goes, like, so, like, when you were on Instagram Live saying my mother was in hell, and then Sweet Tea, like, tries to, like, be like,
I remember seeing that shit.
Tries to, like, sort of be like, no, what I meant was, but Heavenly goes, because of that, my sister reached out to me, and now we're building a relationship. So I want to thank you for that. And it was like, and you could tell Sweet Tea was like, so what I meant was, and Heavenly's like, look, I'm thanking you. I'm thanking you for that. Because it was, I was like, that was such a great way to turn that on her.
You know, like, I just said a second ago that Heavenly never handles anything right. Bitch handled that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. she made Sweet Tea look small in that moment. And, like, she really does a good job, I will say, of, like, just, like, handling Sweet Tea.
Yeah.
In, like, both her and Jackie, whatever you may think of it, like, they really did handle Sweet Tea a lot this season.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is Sweet Tea came in looking for a fight. And it's like, girl, you are not ready.
Yeah, there's for a moment. There's a moment in episode 3 of it where, like, Sweet Tea just wants to kick up the fight again, and yeah. Like, very clearly, and the way that Heavenly just goes, "Yeah, you want something? Because Jackie's gonna stand up and fight for me. Get up, Jackie!" And like, it just makes everyone crack up, and just like again stops the conversation in a place where it's like minimizes Sweet Tea like 1,000%. It was so smart.
It's so good. Well done, Heavenly School of Shade.
So they let the ladies go into the back while they have the men come out to do their segment. Andy asked Greg about the stuff about Phaedra asking for $4,000 a month and whether that's true. This was frustrating as hell to me because they really were playing with this sort of accusation now. Because now it's Greg basically is like, so like me and Phaedra hit it off and she said that she needed a man who could do that for her, you know, that she does for herself because that's like how much she pays for herself. So it wasn't like...
It wasn't that she said, you're going to pay me $4,000 a month if you want to date me. No, it was... Look, I'm looking for a man who's going to take care of me, and this is kind of what...
This is the this tax is bracket.
This is what I'm used to.
Yeah.
This is what I'm used to happening in my life. And so, like, you're going to need to put up or shut up.
Right.
Like, you're either going to take care of me in the way that I am used to be taken care of, or this is not happening.
The way they spin it, though, is it was like an actual contract.
Like, she was trying to, like... be a sugar baby or something.
No. That's not what happened. And then at one point, Andy asked, did anything happen? And Greg goes, not in real life. It's like, what does that mean? Like, Greg was annoying me with some of these answers. It was like...
I can't trust the word that comes out of that man's mouth. Because number one, he sounds like Mickey Mouse. And number two, it's all lies.
Yeah, I feel bad for Sweet Tea. Literally, Andy asked about inviting the stripper to the wedding, and he's like, that kind of crosses some kind of line, right? And Greg goes, it was a theoretical invitation.
What the fuck does that mean?
Like, oh, I'm sure that came across to her, right? Like, I just like... And then he asks at one point, Andy asks about like the tricking Sweet Tea when it came to the robbers.
Oh my God.
And like, he like kind of, again, this man is a psychologist.
There would have been smoke on my heels. That is the biggest red flag I've ever fucking heard of. That was awful.
He goes, in retrospect, I would have handled it differently. But, you know, she just didn't seem like she was, interested or cared. So I thought maybe, you know, putting her in that scenario would, you know, make her care a little bit more. Again, you have a psychologist degree. How does that happen?
I feel like he's those kind of people like Sandoval who goes to therapy enough times to learn the language and then abuses
it.
Yes. He does the same shit. He abuses his position as a psychologist, as an expert, to then manipulate people.
And Andy wasn't even like, is that what you teach like your patients? Like in terms of like, you know what I mean? Like
Andy don't know what the fuck he does. He said he's the medicine, right? Cool.
Awesome. Cool. He's got a jacket. Great. So then they get to chemist section, which I knew was going to be like the biggest section for like the men's stuff. He asked about like the cutting off of the nut sacks comment. Oh,
can we talk about the fact that this man thinks that there are multiple sacks?
Yeah.
It's one sack. It's two nuts. Like you have them. You should be able to tell. Reach down and touch him.
He's an oral doctor, though. He's not a
he don't know nothing about oral either.
Apparently he knows a lot. That's why they don't do it. When Alicia was later being like, we're both dentists, so that's why we don't do oral sex, because we know the horrors of, like... I was like, are you out of your fucking mind right now?
Do either of you have lockjaw?
Well, yeah.
Okay, then the danger's gone. So now we're talking about cleanliness. Do you know what mouthwash is? Okay, we're good now,
right? Unless he's getting it elsewhere, I don't know what you have to worry about because you're in a marriage.
Do you use soap and water?
Yeah.
Do we know how to floss and use mouthwash and a toothbrush? I don't understand the issue. I need you to explain it to me like I'm five because you don't seem to understand.
Maybe don't explain it to me like I'm five.
Maybe not like I'm five.
I'm sure Toya's boys know more.
Maybe like I'm 15.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's asked about the nut sacks comment and he goes, it was taken out of context. And then he,
okay. Also cutting off just the sacks, the multiple sacks, leaving the testicles in place, right? No scrotum.
I love that you're really taking this from an anatomy perspective.
It just really irritated me, and it just you're a doctor, sir.
Sure.
You should know basic anatomy.
So, but here's the thing. He was clearly briefed. Like, he worked on this story of, like, hey, because he knew he was going to have it coming for him at this reunion. So he's like, it was taken out of context. You know, first thing that I hear when I came to this country is, like, happy wife, happy life. I hate that statement because in that statement, it infers that the man's happiness is not important.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't really. Like, I can understand how some perceptions of it can go that way.
You can twist it to mean that, sure.
Yeah. He goes, there's a lot of men suffering in silence. They're miserable. They haven't had sex in 2 years with their wife, sleeping in separate rooms because, you know, happy wife, happy life. But that's not happy wife. Like,
that's assuming that your wife doesn't want to have sex.
Right. That the only reason that you guys would have sex is for your pleasure.
Right.
You realize you can please a woman with sex, right? Like, I don't like it. Like, it's just kind of like, but also it's like that wasn't even what the conversation was really about.
And right.
I love Eugene, like, checks him basically. He was like, you were saying women, you know, were being assertive, that they were doing too much. And Kevin's like, well, I said in relationships, not in general. And Eugene's like, you kind of said in general. Like, that conversation at the cigar bar was very much about society, like not just simply like in a personal relationship.
I mean, to quote Phaedra, I do too much because you do too little, and right now you're doing too much.
Yeah, it was strange to me. I did like that Damon did assert that, like, you know, if it's about leadership, it's about leadership, but I think you can be a good leader and not be loud about it.
Right.
Like, and that's why, like, he's like, that's where I am in the relationship. Like, I don't need to, like, shout it at the top of my lungs that I'm, you know,
right,
the leader and the guiding person. And that's, and again, like, going back to what we've said all season, if that's your dynamic, fine. But it's right. Not.
It's about consent.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, everything in a relationship is about consent. Like, Heavenly allows Damon to lead because she wants him to,
right?
Not because he came in and decided that that's what was going to happen. However, Alicia seemed like, the way that she was talking in Napa seemed like she wasn't necessarily comfortable with that dynamic until Kemma kind of forced it on her.
Yeah.
And now she's very much changed her tune, but in Napa, that was a different story.
Right. And then, Kurt, like, the whole, like, training your wife or whatever comment comes up. And Curtis is like, well, first and foremost, you can't train your wife. And then Kemma goes, I mean, obviously, you can't train another human being. The essence of what I'm saying is, if you meet another person and you're both from different cultures, you have to educate each other on the differences and find a middle ground. I'm like, that's a complete rewriting. That's not what you meant by train. And I know that because you literally told the story about, like, wanting your dinner as soon as you enter the door and having to reiterate, where's my food?
You literally created a Pavlovian response to you walking in the front door.
Yeah, it's not about culture.
It's like, about abuse. That was disgusting.
And so that worries me. The not apologizing for it, but instead trying to rewrite what I meant to say was kind of worries me as well, because it's like, you know, in the background, like, no, what I said was fucked up, but I'm not able to sort of like say.
Yeah.
Because we know that you didn't mean that in terms of like the training up thing. So it's like.
Well, and it means that we can't really trust what Alicia says about the relationship because she keeps changing her story on things. And
well, she also says later when asked about it, like that he was joking again. She says that again.
And it's not that she's untrustworthy. It's that she has literally been conditioned to just agree with him.
Yeah.
Even if what he says is batshit. Like, it really makes me worry for her.
Yeah, I agree. So they finish up with the men's segment. They come back for, like, where they all get to come together and have, like, the group segment. But then there's an extra chair, like, in between Quad and Phaedra. And they're like, what the fuck is the extra chair for? Like, big confused, like, cliffhanger into this second episode going into this third. And then this is when Apollo appears. Which I was happy with how much time they gave. Like, I saw a lot of people being like, why is Apollo on? Like, this just kind of feels like it's about more Atlanta than it is about, like, Married to Medicine.
I agree.
But they didn't devote too much time to it, to me.
Yeah. Can we talk about how this man is still fine as fuck?
Oh, I think he's finer. I think he looks better now than he did previously.
Oh, see, I don't feel like he's aged much at all.
Oh, he definitely hasn't aged. I will agree with that. But I like the way his facial hair is, like, sort of, like, built out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, he was a little... He looked younger and not the most, like, mature way.
That's
when
fair.
He used to be on Atlanta.
Yeah, and there towards the end, he was definitely in kind of a... squirrely kind of almost bordering on manic kind of vibe to him because he got caught, he's going to jail, all of this stuff. But I think, you know, this is the first time we've seen him since he went to jail.
Yeah. Well, we saw him, like, a couple times on Atlanta. Like, remember he had that lunch with Sheree and was in our fashion show and stuff like that. But we've actually seen him.
Like, he's shown up in the background, like, showed up, said hi, and then walked away. Like, this is the first time we've had him literally on screen, I think, since he admitted to Kenya that he was lying.
I think, like...
about her in Vegas.
And getting some, like, in-depth stuff. Like,
yeah.
I agree with that. So Phaedra said that she was the one that invited Apollo because all the women had been asking and like making comments and making jokes, like talk and specifically points to Toya. And Toya's like, look, I wasn't making jokes, you know.
Like Toya had a point, like, where is he? Like he should be at his child's birthday party.
Well, and she was like, I was trying to connect with you and like you anytime that topic came up, you kind of got offense, like you took offense to it basically, and it's like I'm not trying to, like, you know, come for you or anything. It's hard to tell with Toya because, like, she could say that same thing for how she handled Alicia this season but it was pretty obvious to me that she was coming for Alicia.
Yeah, but I think Toya knows who the fuck Phaedra is.
Yeah,
and I think she's like still testing the waters because Phaedra very much came in under the radar this season and didn't really let loose on anybody. And I'm excited to see what happens next season because I feel like now that she feels solidified on this cast, she will actually become the Phaedra we have known and grown to fear, you know. And but I think all the other girls were just waiting on her to let loose. And they didn't want to be the one that she let loose on.
Sure. Yeah, because once you get that target on
you. Once you release the Phaedra...
Apollo says that it started rocky when he had got back and they, you know, when they were trying to reconnect, they were having children, you know, exchanges with the boys at like Chick-fil-A and stuff like that. But it's gotten better now at this point. He's remarried. I thought it was so fascinating. He's like, you know, we're trying to blend, you know, but it takes time. And then Andy asks Phaedra, like, what's your relationship with his new wife? And she goes, we don't have one. Andy goes, might you? And she goes, I don't think so.
I
don't think you need to have the relationship with a new wife, but if I do agree that there needs to be like a...
I think she's still in love with him.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Really?
Mainly because I don't think she would have been talking wistfully about, you know, if we were on this cast, we may have made it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you don't talk about... an ex that way if you're really over it.
That's a good point.
You know, I think the way, and you know how she's had no real serious relationships since Apollo.
Yeah.
You know, like all of these things, you know, so I just.
That's fascinating.
I think at least there's a part of her that still loves him. He's the father of her children. Right. Like, there's always going to be a part.
I would hope there would be.
Yeah, there always is going to be love. And I think she's still dealing with separating the love for the father of her children from the love of her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once she can do that, she'll really be able to move on and find somebody that's right for her and that's stable.
Yeah, I like that. I like that concept for them. Andy asked about, like, the last time we saw you was, like, you know, the stuff was in Candy's garage and, like, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He says that, like, a week prior to this, he had a conversation where Todd apologized to him. And he said, it's like a lot of things happen just to make a storyline. And I'm not sure if you understand the adverse effects of what you did, but there was one. I wasn't sure what he meant by that.
I thought he was talking to Andy.
That's what I was. It was almost as if he was like, and Andy was like, okay, so let's change the subject. So you were with Joe Giudice in prison. Like, it seemed like Andy was like, moving on. I don't know what he meant by that.
Yeah. Like, was he talking to Andy via, or was he talking to Bravo via Andy? Was he saying what he said to Todd?
Right.
Was he almost talking to Phaedra?
Yeah, because it's then, like that was kind of like a lot of the impetus of like the split between like Candy and Phaedra was like sort of like whether, like,
right, it was like Candy and Todd were taking his side.
Yeah,
I was like, that's not what happened, but I can understand why Phaedra felt betrayed in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to the whole frickin' frack thing that ended up getting Phaedra kicked off of Bravo for however long.
Yeah, so they bring up the stuff that Greg had said about on the men's segment about going on some dates with Phaedra and the whole $4,000 thing. And Phaedra's just being like, when did I ask you for $4,000 a month, Greg? And like,
and she gets that screw face that I'm going to ask you and you better not fucking lie to me.
Yeah. And then he gives the bullshit thing about, like, you know, you told me that you spend $4,000 a month on yourself and you need a man to, you know, do the same for you, you know, whatever. Greg goes, I was working hard. You know, I took you to Roy's. And Phaedra goes, where's Roy's? Like, what? Like, she doesn't even know what the fuck he's talking about in terms of, like...
I think it was Curtis that said, Roy's used to be the spot. But it's like, come on.
And I think Toya even said, like, I figured out that it's clearly, like, you know, you're just not that into him. Like,
yeah.
It's like, Greg might have had some feelings or something, but, like...
I think it... Even then, I think maybe the 4,000 was the fuck you number.
Have you
heard of the concept of the fuck you number?
No.
So basically, it's something that like actors do. They have a fuck you number where they're like, I don't really want to do this job, but if they'll pay me my fuck you number, then I'll do it.
I've heard about. Yeah.
So like, if you're like, this is a really fucking stupid movie that I don't really want to do, but if they'll pay me,
they're at my limit.
You know, if they'll pay me the $6 million to do it,
yeah,
or however much, then I'll do it. 6 million's my fuck you number, you know. But if they come back with something less than that, then I'll just tell them fuck you, I'm not doing it.
Right.
Yeah. So like, I feel like the 4,000 was her fuck you number. She was like, I don't want to fucking date this man, he's gross. Like, 4,000. That's my fuck you number. Oh, you want to come back with two? No, we're good.
And it was so weird because then at one point Greg goes, look, in retrospect, I should have lied. I should have said, hey, you can get this 4,000 and we could have gotten together and then you never know. And they cut this, like, Sweet Tea has a look on her face like, what is he saying right now? Like that, like.
It was wild. It's like, why would you say that?
You realize your wife's here, right?
Your wife and your ex-wife that you married after her.
Yeah.
Now, I think Quad would have been fine without ever having dated your ass. But Sweet Tea is currently reaping the benefits.
Right.
Like, come on. Come on, Greg.
They get into the...
Greg is an idiot. I'm sorry. This man is dumb.
Mm. I did like... So, Andy brings up that Quad apologized to Toya, to Eugene, and Quad then apologizes to Eugene as well. And it seemed... And Eugene's like, apology accepted, you know.
Yeah.
Quick and simple. You know, that was nice. Then they get into the Hilton Head controversy and all that. I love when they come back. Like, Andy's about to ask the question to Heavenly, and Heavenly then goes... To Simone, and goes, before you start yelling at me.
Heavenly knew. She was ready.
Heavenly is basically like, I never accused you. I never said you did it maliciously. I didn't, you know, wasn't my point. My point is I knew Jackie was upset. And it's like, and says like, I shouldn't have spoken for Jackie, but Jackie needs to speak up more herself. And like.
Yeah, but Heavenly could have said that without coming in so hot. Why does Heavenly have to come in like it's a life or death situation every time she opens her mouth?
Yeah.
It's not that serious.
Simone's like, yeah, that's the point, though. It's like, is that I need to hear it from her. I don't give a fuck about your feelings. I don't, like.
Yeah.
And then they start to sort of, like, battle a little bit more because it just kind of gets heated. Alicia tries to jump in and be like, okay, but, like, Simone, like, why wouldn't you at least listen to Heavenly and, like, change the date? Like, why wouldn't you change it? She's like, I couldn't have changed it. It was too late to change it.
It was like I had said. It was asinine to think she was going to have a chance to change this trip.
Or that it was hers to change.
Oh, that's true.
Like, with productions, I you can't really, like, say that, I guess, at the reunion. But it's, like, still, like...
But, like, she could have easily said, do you know how long... You know, because you've planned a trip for this group before. You know how long it takes to get a hotel approved through production, to get, you know, a location approved. All of these things. Get all of the deposits made. Everything's paid for.
Right.
Like, I couldn't have changed it. Yeah. I would have had to pay for it out of my own pocket. That's not happening.
Yeah, and then Simone basically tells Jackie that she needs to hear it from her, essentially. And she's like, I'm telling you, it is putting a damper on my relationship with you when she butts in.
Yeah.
And so you need to, if I'm, you know, we have been friends 10 years even prior to this show even starting.
Right.
So, like, I need to hear it from you. And she was like, I could see it on Jackie's face the minute I said it. So I knew at that moment. She didn't have to communicate it to me.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's Look, what it is.
If Jackie is big bad enough to tell all of her patients they're too fat to, you know, have children and be all mean to all her patients, then she could tell Simone, I don't want to go to Hilton Head and this hurt me.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that fucking difficult to open your mouth and say when you have a problem with a friend. Not that hard.
Yeah, I agree. Andy asked Toya about, so the topic of the Kemah stuff comes up again, and asked what her thought is on Kemah's view of a woman's role. And Toya goes, I didn't make anything of what Kemah said because it definitely is not my relationship. I'm like, that's not true, Toya. You had opinions.
We all had opinions.
And then she goes, both our needs are met in our relationship. So hopefully with Kemah and Alicia, her needs are being met as well, which is a little like, again, she's digging. Toya is digging as much as I agree with her.
But she's right, though. And like then, it is, but her point is, it is very clear to all of us that Kemah's needs are being met, and it is also very clear to us that Alicia's probably are not.
That's again, I agree with that on its face. It's just the way in which Toya is being like, well, I didn't have an issue with it. It was just, you know, going off. But her being like, I just hope Alicia's needs are being met as well. And Alicia fires back and goes, and they are. I've never complained about my husband's penis size. And I was like, oh, I know. It felt like I felt bad for Eugene, but I was like, Toya, again, when Toya pokes, it's like you got to like bite back at her. And so like, I appreciated that.
And then Eugene handled it great because he was like, you know what? We'll just settle it here. I'll whip it out. And Andy's like, okay, come on. Andy's never going to turn down the chance to see a dick.
Yeah.
That man is a horny, horny man.
Yeah, they do a 10-year compilation of just sort of like all the moments over the years, and there's a nice little like
Can we talk about how awkward all of these are?
Which just
all of these little like that they've been doing.
Oh,
all
well, they do the, they do like the flashback ones, but then this was like a full like montage.
Especially when all of the spots with Quad were with her and Greg, and how awful that relationship was, and it was like, y'all couldn't have picked some other scenes? Y'all couldn't have picked something else?
Something a little nicer.
This is awkward.
I found it interesting that Andy asked about, like, did you, for the doctors, like, were you worried about, like, when you came onto the show about, like, it affecting, like, your practice and how, like, it would be, like, perceived and stuff like that? Simone says not until Toya and Mariah fought at that party.
I can't, like, that would be my first concern.
Yeah.
Like, when you are in, like, doctors are already, like, kind of high profile, and then to get on a reality television show that is centered around your work, I'd be real trepidatious.
Yeah,
especially when you know how Toya is and you know how Mariah and Heavenly are. And you know how Quad is.
Bitches fighting in ball gowns.
And you know you scream real loud.
Like, I, well, yes. But, like, I think they've, here, I still think they've found enough of a middle ground eventually. Like, yeah. I would, but I do understand where it's like, it got very intense in some of those earlier seasons. Like, it, like, there is shit in the earlier seasons of Married to Medicine that would, like, that fight, the Quad, Lisa Nicole fight, like, oof. Where, like, literally, like, you're drawing blood. And it's like, yeah. That is like, that would have been the point where I was just like, what are we doing here? Like,
but I mean, I understand, like, especially when you have shit like happened this season with Jackie.
Yeah.
Where, like, the validity of her practice came under fire for very good reasons. You know, like, it's taking a risk when you put your career on television. It's one thing if you're a reality star like you are on Housewives, you know, like, that's completely different. Like, you've got your store or you've got your whatever off to the side, but really the money that you're making is from the show, and so therefore you're kind of incentivized to be messy. As opposed to Married to Medicine, you have to balance that. You have to be messy enough to stay on the show, but still professional enough to where people still want to come see you, because you could not pay me enough money to go see Dr. Greg.
No.
I can't imagine he gets many visitors.
Probably not.
At least not that know about the show.
Oh, you would have to not know about the show. Like, I could not, like, I mean, for, like, in terms of, like, therapists, like, you can't, like, you know what I mean? I can't know your dirty shit.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to, like, sort of, like, analyze my life. That's just not, you know.
But if I were to go into an ER in Atlanta and my doctor is Eugene.
Yeah, but
I would feel comfortable because I trust him.
Sure.
I feel like he has earned our trust.
Yeah,
over 10 years on this show.
And the field is different and the work is different to where it's,
right.
You know.
But even then, if I went into an ER in Atlanta and it was Dr. Greg, I'd say, fuck you, find me someone else.
Oh, sure. That's fair. They dismiss the gentleman and they do like a little like lighter topics like right towards the end. Well, sort of lighter. They talk about how Phaedra and Toya were kind of shading Sweet Tea during her, like, dress fitting and stuff like that, which I'm kind of with Sweet Tea on, where it was like,
I didn't think it was that bad.
It wasn't
she
as
got a
bad.
Flat pancake booty. Like, she knows this. Like, all Phaedra was saying was, like, you need to wear a dress that is going to, like, accentuate the things you want to accentuate. Like, that's just proportionizing. That's learning how to dress your body.
Sure.
That's not shade. That's just real life.
I think there's a way they could have phrased it better.
But it's Phaedra. What do you want?
Yeah, that's
fair. Like, she's not going to read you a nursery rhyme. That's not her.
Sure. Oh, my God. And then Phaedra and Heavenly getting into, like, interior design, like, shade. Because Heavenly shaded Phaedra's house. And Phaedra basically being like, so Heavenly doesn't really travel internationally, so she wouldn't understand any of that. And then when she asked, like, what she thought of Heavenly's house, she goes, you know, I've been to her home, but I didn't go inside. The only thing I did see was a curtain rod hanging in her bedroom that was, like, sloping down.
Wow.
It was fantastic. I want more of Phaedra in Heaven. Like, I want them reading each other much more. Like, that's thing for next season.
I need them to be bitter enemies.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I need Phaedra to align with Simone and them to go against Heavenly. That's what I need. Because that pairing would just be...
Print tickets.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. They close out with like a big celebration of like the 10 years. Andy gives them the choice to either cheers with wine or brown liquor. And like, I love that Simone is like, no, I'm going to go with the wine. I'll go along with Toy, even though clearly she won the brown liquor. But yeah, that was the last two parts of the Married to Medicine reunion. I think a great season. Like, I really think like there's never a bad season of Married to Medicine when you have that dynamic with the cast working so well. And hopefully Quad can get back in that same page and we can get more from her next season. So yeah, really, really good stuff.
All right, let's get into these tops and bottoms. We've got Drag Race, we've got Traitors, we've got Married to Medicine. 2 weeks of each. What you thinking?
I'll start with my bottom. I'm unfortunately going to give it to Kate Chastain on the Traitors. Yeah. Only just because the final execution was not what it needed to be.
Yeah,
like I agree with you that she was kind of given a shit sandwich.
Yeah.
And like there wasn't much she could do, but like I also think there were moves that she made that were really detrimental to that final end game. And like, I think she's a great personality, but doesn't necessarily have the game playing ability to really sort of like nail that down, unfortunately. My top, I'm going to give it to Heavenly on Married to Medicine because I think she did a great job handling Sweet Tea. I think she did a real fantastic job of like also not being too into other people's fights, but like having moments of like dipping stuff. Like she dipped a little bit in favor of Quad. She kind of like had moments where she advocated where she needed to. And I think she's one of the best reality villains, quote unquote, like we've had on reality TV in a long time. So just really masterful stuff from Heavenly on Married to Medicine. What about you, babe? What are your tops and bottoms?
My bottom is gonna go to Plain Jane just because I'm bored. I'm just bored. Like you need to stop living up to your name, honestly, because it's like for someone that literally had all of this controversy surrounding you at the beginning of the season,
right,
to be let down this hard on your performance, it's like why are you still here? I'd go home.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily give the return that you
like. It's not bad.
Yeah,
it's just not good. Like and the thing is with the controversy and all of that stuff, it came out in her favor.
Mm-hmm.
Like we found out that things were way over exaggerated as to what happened. Like everything was cleaned up. Everybody's on good terms with each other. Right. And then we come into the season expecting to cheer her on. And we just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't, I'm over it. Like, she's not good at reading. She's not good at, like, her reads are just mean. They're not reads. They're not funny. They're not entertaining. They're just mean.
No.
You know, and, like, her looks are good, but they're not jaw-dropping. I'm not gagging. Like, I just, why is she here? I'd rather see some other girls that went home earlier still on the season than her at this point.
Yeah, I probably agree.
My top for the week is going to go to Trishelle. And the reason is...
Controversial opinion.
The reason is because I like to reward good behavior when it happens.
Yeah.
She is recognizing the error of her ways. She is getting guidance on how to be a better person. And I feel like we need to, as far as me as a white person, I have the ability to say, good, that's what you need to be doing.
Sure.
Good for you. I don't think anybody of color should have to do that. Absolutely, there's no onus on them to prop up someone for just educating themselves. Mm-hmm. But I feel like within the white community, we need to kind of go, yeah, you're doing what you need to do. Keep doing that. So I want to give her a slight prop for that. And she won the fucking season. Yeah. Like, yeah, with
CP. I think
CP.
She's, like I said before, I think it's controversial to say, but I think she's a very deserving winner simply from gameplay.
Yeah. From gameplay, sure, I'll give you that. I don't know. I go back and forth on Trishel, and part of it is this emotional thing of wanting the traitors to win.
Yeah.
And I think if we saw this season from the eyes of the faithful without knowledge of who the traitors were, I think this would feel like a much more deserved win.
Right.
So I'm going with that and saying, let's reward people for trying to better themselves, and let's reward the bitch who fucking won the season. You know, like, at the end of the day, her and CT got through the finish line together, and they won that cash.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode of A Gay and His Envy.
Join us next time for more of our recaps and hot takes. And be sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you are listening. And check us out on our social media at A Gay and His Envy on all the platforms.
A special shout out to Shane Ivers, who wrote Pulsar, the song we use for our theme.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin. And we're out.
This show is a member of the Sorgatron Media Podcast Network. Find out more at sorgatronmedia.com.